contract management and so forth. Before I deal with those issues, maybe I need clarity on some of the issues. Particularly on the appointment for the procedure in appointing members of the tender committee. My first question would be, who appoints them? For how long? Do they sign appointment letters, particularly on ethical issues like conflict of interest? Do we outsource, that is, this function, or it is internally that is done? And after the appointments, I think that the team is noting the questions. After the appointments, are they trained on supply chain management issues?
No, Comrade Kikar, I always prefer that you ask them one person in the response. And there are many. They may have a way to put emphasis and where not to.
Okay.
So, let's deal with one question at a time.
Yeah. Okay, let's deal with the first question. Who appoints his members of the tender committee and for how long?
Thank you, Honourable Member. They are appointed by the group CEO. They are appointed for a 12-month period.
Okay. They sign agreement with us, particularly on issues like that is ethical conduct and all those issues.
Yes, they do sign appointment letters.
And the other part, last part of this question.
They are guided by the policy in terms of what is their responsibility and their expectation.
Are ethical issues included in the policy?
That is correct, ma'am.
The other issue is, after the appointments, do you normally train them?
That is correct. They are trained. We have also looked at other advanced types of training.
Let's then look at the annual report. I indicated that I'll be dealing with procurement contract management and unsolicited bid. But I want to refer you to page 56 of the report. It's paragraph 7. No, paragraph 28, sorry. The AG, that is in his report, found that there's a contract amounting to approximately...
Let's pull the mic towards you.
Yeah. Okay. Thank you, sir. I'm saying the AG in his, that is finding, he indicated that there was a contract amounting to approximately 17.9 billion. Of which is 80% of the 56.9 billion relating to BPE Equity Partners to the fleet removal program, the rolling stock. That the contract was awarded to that. Now he discovered that there was non-compliance with the invitation to the participation, as the agency did not consistently apply its discretion to qualify bidders. That is in terms of conflict of interest as requested by section 511A, subsection 3 of the PMA. Okay.
So what's your point in that statement?
Yes. Now, if you listen to what I'm saying in terms of finding from there, that is Asian. Earlier on you indicated that the members, that is, of the tender committee are trained on these issues. But if you listen to what or you look at what the AG has found, it is very clear that there was a transgression, that is in terms of the law. Can I get the answer as to why?
Thank you, Honourable Member, for the question.
You know, technically, I must stress that the accounting authority is God. As much as I don't mind you responding, but the extra responsibility of talking to us here is with God. So, questions are going to be directed to the chairperson of the board, not so much.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. On matters of this nature, the board would delegate the chair of the Audit and Risk Committee of the board. I'm going to ask her to deal with the question.
Thank you, Chair. This matter relates to the contract that is for Gibella, which was for 59 billion, and that portion was the DE portion of 30% as you said earlier. The non-compliance here mainly is the fact that when the tenders were closed, the criteria that was used to appoint the winning 30% DE portion was not according to that criteria, was changed. They changed the criteria that initially the appointment was about a number of issues, but they decided that if a bidder do not have experience in the rail sphere, they will be qualified and safe. So that is the non-compliance.
Well, I think this point is follow up from his earlier question. When members are appointed, sign appointment letters, get training, all these issues. Now, immediately after that, then we have this. How then do we say the letters of appointment and the training that we're giving people serve any purpose? Or how then do you still have these kind of things when you say you take your people for training to ensure that your procurement is done according? I think that's the essence of the question, not so much the content of what happened.
Chairperson, first you confirm that query board of management, they were trained. But in the course of their evaluation, the AG found that the NEF that funded part of the BEE transaction had not declared Republic of Interest and participated in the discussion that took place, and therefore they consider that a conflict of interest. I can ask the head group CEO to add.
NEF, are we talking about the National Empowerment Fund? The National Empowerment
Fund? Yes, Chair. Yes.
Thank you, Chair. As the Chairman has indicated, yes, it is. It relates to the NEF that did not declare their interest. To the point that I would like to make is that this particular adjudication committee was not necessarily only a cover. It was a multi-disciplined involving treasury, a probity officer that were appointed as per the instruction of the treasury, and of course CRASA members were also involved, and the funder NEF itself was also involved. So I could only allocate this to an oversight on their part, because if you look at the combination of this committee, it is advanced and well informed and understanding of the processes relating to procurement processes and adjudication. Thank you.
Okay. Will I be correct if I say this, the group that you're referring to was doing this on behalf of CRASA?
Yes,
It was acting on behalf of PRASA.
Thanks.
Will PRASA then be in a position, because the AG has discovered here that there was no attendance register provided, there were no minutes that is submitted. Will PRASA be in a position that is to provide us, that is with the attendance register of the people that is present, that is not here? Unless I get information to the contrary, Honorable Chair, I have not seen the attendance register, and this matter has become the subject of investigation in order for the board to comply with the requirements of the public finance management, because it has been raised as a critical irregularity which we can't leave unattended. So it is the subject of further investigation. In order that we should put in place measures that in the future would prevent the recurrence of such incidents. Now, Chair, I think the answer does not deal with my initial question. When I started my input, I asked as to whether the members are trained after their appointment. Now, one would expect simple issues like the attendance register in the meeting that is to be present person of an ordinary that is meeting, particularly when we deal with issues like that is tenders. Unfortunately, the AG discovered that there was, PASA did not provide that is the attendance register.
Chairperson, I need to unfortunately defend.
Well, I think Chair, let's accept that, that is the case.
Yes, that is the case.
That's what happened.
Can we then confirm that the reason why the attendance register was not provided? It is because the members who sat in the tender committee had a conflict of interest.
Chairperson, I would not speculate on that matter. I would know what was the reason why they did not keep the attendance register.
But is it usual that in such meetings you don't have attendance issues? Or is this just one particular unfortunate incident?
Well, Chairperson, it is not normal, it should not be usual, but I think the manner in which quite a number of procurement meetings took place, we're going to find that there were constantly those glaring mistakes where the attendance register was not kept and was not given to the AG.
I think you can avoid it. There is a reason. You know, when you go to departments and don't find documents when the Auditor General comes in, documents are lost. You know, it's not poor record keeping. There is a reason why documents are not there. I think that is the point. But I get your point that you can't speculate. But at the same time, we can't be stopped from taking that line of reasoning. That's why I was asking, is it normal that
Now, Chair, I think the point that you are raising is the point that I was going to. That is to raise, maybe as a follow-up, that I don't want the Chair to speculate, but maybe to take the process forward, let me request the Chair, that is with his team, that we be provided, that is with the minutes of that meeting, the recordings that is of that meeting, and the attendance register. Because we want to check as to what the Auditor General is saying in terms of the conflict of interest. Is it, correct or not? Because at this point in time, it would be difficult, that is, for us to even conclude as to those individuals who are there who had the conflict of interest.
Honourable Chair, we have noted the request. We'll go and intensify the search for the minutes and or any recordings that might be there. I am not sure if the acting group CEO, where he is sitting, he's got any recordings of those meetings. I'll give him the opportunity to say so if you got them. If you don't have them, say you don't have them. Let's not spend time on it.
I believe there are certain records, but this particular one, Chair, is not that remains.
Chair, it complicates the whole thing. It seems you do have the answer. Because the acting group CEO is even saying this particular one is not there. Now why do you then allow me to even say to you, provide us with the information, knowing for a fact that you don't have the information?
Well, we don't, as a board, we don't have those recordings, and I think if the group CEO, acting CEO says he's got it, he must say so. The problem with his answer is that he says there are some records, but this particular one is not there. I don't know which records he is referring to, because the specific one is, do we have minutes of that meeting? Do we have recordings of that meeting? I think that's the answer to the question we need to answer.
Yeah, no. I think unless he has something else to say, I thought I understand him to be saying that on this particular tender, information is not there. That's how I understood your response for it. Just the attendance issues. All right, I forgot to make the usual request. This is our cellular phone off. Please, don't put it on silent. Just switch it off. Because even if you drink when it's on silent, whatever is inside here is not being recorded. So your phone ringing on silent will be messing up the proceeding in terms of preserving. Don't want that when people want the recording of this having the file that the recordings are not there because your phone is ringing. Acting group CEO.
Chair, as I said, I confirm that the attendance register was not found, as the AG has stated. We did not find it. We look for it.
Comment, plan.
Even the minutes were also not found. If the minutes were also not found, how did you add adjudicate on this matter?
In group CEO, do we have minutes?
Yes, we do have minutes.
Okay, thanks. I think we would request that would be supplied with copies of those minutes. Maybe from those minutes, it would be easy for us to extract as to who participated that is in this meeting. Thank you, sir. Let me also look at the unsolicited data and refer you to the annual report on page 57. It says the agency did not notify National Treasury that is the award of the unsolicited bid proposal to the value of 91 million in contravention that is with paragraph 12.1 of the National Treasury. Practice number 11 of 2008-2009. My question is, what were the compelling reasons? Why didn't you, that is, inform National Treasury? Because in terms of the regulation is very clear that before you move in that direction, you will have to discuss or get permission from National Treasury.
Once again, Honourable Chair, these are events that happened at a particular point in time,
and we have not received any report why NASA Treasury was not informed in compliance with the regulations. I think the acting group CEO might know something about that. Maybe he can tell us.
Thank you, sir. It was simply negligent on our part because there is a clear understanding of the treasury note in that regard. Process was not followed.
Who did not follow process?
Chair, on investigation, this matter was not adjudicated properly, firstly, and the chief procurement officer and former group CEO are the one who were the signatories on this matter.
Now, subsequent to that, what if it? We just accepted that the law was transgressed and it's fine. We are not going to do anything. So what happened immediately thereafter? You have just indicated that the people who did that. And what happened to them?
I'd like to ask the chair of the Audit and Risk Committee to present the honorable chair.
Thank you, sir. This matter is a legal matter. The contract was since stopped. The Baran, the company that was service provider that was given this project, took us to court, and we are defending the matter. However, the contract has since been stopped, and we are in the process of investigation to take action against anybody who is implicated besides the two that were mentioned before. So there is an investigation and the matter is at court. Contract has been suspended.
Now, sir, my other question would be on the same committee. Because if you refer to page 47 of the report, this Finance, Capital, Investment and Procurement Committee. Maybe one needs clarity on the role of this committee. Is this committee also involved in operational issues?
The Finance, Capital, Investment Committee is involved not on operational matters. We get the report from management after the adjudication has been done. Then we assess the adjudication, and then we do a report for the board.
Okay. But do you at times negotiate that is prices?
We do not negotiate prices. We look at the fair process.
I think you do have the copy of the annual report with you. Let's look at page 47 and look at the second bullet. You are saying part of your responsibilities, the successful negotiation of price reduction in price changed.
That would be for variation purposes, not for new bids. Only when we are variating. And the variations also come as a recommendation from the management.
What is variation?
It's the changes, amendment of scope of work and increment of prices. Then you have to look at the motivation, whether the price that they are recommending to increase is in line with the amendment of the scope that they want to increase as a recommendation to the committee. But the motivation comes from the management to vary it.
Is this before the tender procedure?
Variations are projects that are already in our debt. When they want to increase the scope, then they do the motivation and bring it to the board via the SCIP committee. But these are projects that are in our debt already.
No. Yes. Now, my other question is, what role is the CFO that is playing in that? is he involved or she involved, or it's only the board that does it?
I'm not sure if you still refer to bullet 2 or you just refer to the
I'm referring to bullet 2.
When variations are done as through the project manager or the executives that are responsible for those projects, they do a motivation together with the chief procurement officer. Of course, then they'll have to get approval from the finance, the CFO, if the budget is available. CFO has to be involved to confirm the availability of the budget.
And in the committee, he or she is not there to give technical advice?
She's a member of the committee.
Will I then be correct if I say it is maybe an error on page 47 because he or she is not listed as a member? Whereas if you look at that is a governance and performance, there is an area where you included the group CEO as a member.
Group CEO? Or group CFO?
You are correct now. Chair, let me go back to the issue that I raised earlier on. That is of the board, because I need a clarity on the role of the board, and particularly that is the chairperson of the Finance, Capital Investment and Procurement Task Committee, because looking at the report that is in front of me, there is Ms. Matala, who is that is the chairperson, and she seems to be serving in almost all these committees. You are serving in the Finance, Capital, Investments and Procurement Committee, in the Safety, Health and Environmental Committee, and also in the Governance and Finance Committee. Can I get the reason why?
Okay, thanks for the question. I think if you look at all the directors, how they've been assigned to the committees, you'll see that we all serve in the Governance. Governance Committee is the committee of the chairs of the committees. All the committees, they've got a chairperson, and those chairperson, they form a committee called governance, which is chaired by the chairman of the board. And each director is sitting in two committees, like I'm doing. So it's not like an anomaly in my case.
No, thanks for not, Chair. Let me hand over to my colleagues for comment.
All right, comrades, if there are any follow-ups on the areas of focus that committee can address, procurement, contract management, and unsolicited bids. I'll start with you. Well, if any other member wants to ask a question, just Comrade Boy, low. Yeah, okay. Yeah.
Thanks, Chair. I'm assuming that you're allowing us to talk on procurement broadly, not just on that one that you was talking about. I'm talking procurement broadly. Or is somebody going to look at procurement as a subject matter? You know?
No. You might just focus on one. But
yes, you can.
It's focus on procurement.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. Thanks, Chair. Let me then start here by reminding the board that, and I'm talking specifically on the one that Honorable Kekana spoke about, where you spoke about multi departments making up the adjudication panel. We must say to you that at HOPA, it doesn't matter who sits on the adjudication panel, it doesn't matter who you outsource it to. What we won't do is outsource your responsibility for managing finances. We're not going to do that. So to say to us that it was adjudicated by any F or adjudicated by whoever, it's not going to get you off the hook. So I wanted to say that initially, Chairperson, when you stopped me. So let me get that clear. It's the board that ultimately is going to be responsible, regardless of who did what. Let me just premise it by that, Chairperson, initially. But I want to go to two or three points here. You know, the AG indicates that you've got more than 551 million rand of irregular expenditure. And all of it has to do with non-compliance. All of it. You answered to Honorable Kekane that your procurement process or the people responsible are shamed. And I can tell you, non-recusal is the reason. Feasibility study was not done. Suppliers not qualified. Quotations received after closing date. Payment made without the supporting documents.
Because we have a focus area on regular expenditure. But it looks like all the regular expenditure has to do with procurement. So then let's defer it to deal with it when Comrade Chilwane comes on board. Is there any other point you wanted to raise? Because I see you're taking a broad sweep on.
Good morning, members of the board. You see, CEO, we have an obligation here, a code, the law. And if you mislead us, we do have problems here. You see, you said that the adjudication committee is so credible in your eyes that this mismanagement that has been identified by the auditor general might be a mistake. But do you understand how much the fiscal have gone into that? For you to imply, for us to make us believe that your statement is correct. I mean, I'm talking about billions, not talking about fiscal. And not your money, it's the fiscal. Some people down there, prepared for it, ordinary people who are counting. How does that happen? Because consistently every year report, this management, a lack of information to give adequate information to the auditor general seems to be like, what is the problem? And I mean, you're quite so, I have an idea what to say, but you see, at the end, it's what the chairperson of the board wants us to believe and wants us to delay the matter for. As he has done for investigations. But I don't understand, I don't be convinced that for a register you need such an elaborate investigation to be able to convince us that why would such a lot of billions be allowed to flout that not to be, that the whole thing to be faced with and taken into court of non-compliance with ordinary things that are needed. What is the intention? What are you doing? So that we could be able to understand ourselves. But the CEO is telling us, he seems not to be convincing us that the register can just disappear. But he and yourself have got different views on this. Can you help us so that we could be able to be convinced that there's some genuine and honest reflections that are taking place?
Honorable Chair, the process is being asked to speculate on what would have been the reasons for not keeping the register by those who were there at the time. We are not able to do so. I'm not able to do so. All I can say is that having identified these glaring irregularities and wrongs, the board is elaborating systems and measures that would prevent recurrence of this thing and that would make sure that before anything is done, these records are checked and they are kept. So that's what we can say about it for now.
Now, Chairperson, with your respect, you are talking about 59.6 billion. You are not talking about peanuts here. And I can't be asking you to speculate. I don't have that wisdom of how to speculate. I'm talking about the coding that has been provided by the Ocean General. And I'm talking about yourself as an institution having spent a very long time with political generals that come in and out of your office. When you have mismanagement of information, they gave you an opportunity to go to and fro and find information and update your information. Now here you can't find the register. Now you are accusing us of saying that you are asking to speculate. It's not a game plan, be honest with us. This is 59.6 billion, a loss in the fiscal. And how do you want us to be able to say that what they are reflecting or what they are saying is speculation? And give you, with your board, an opportunity to go and play somewhere and wait for you to improve your city. What happened to this place? What is the intention here? For this information, and your CEO says, let's trust, go and open this mouth. He says that this adjudication committee is not the best. He says the best people involved. Now you want us to believe that a mere register cannot found the whole institution. What type of an approach is that? And it's not doing for investigation. But investigation is a type of people who are present. When we were doing the auditing, they were supposed to have updated the participants. What is the problem here? A bunch of people don't know what I'm talking about. We're talking about the report of the auditor. Take us into confidence. Chairperson of the
committee. I don't think so. I see that your question relates to a specific issue. I take the broad and general view of the state of things it is a reflection of part of the problem that I see. And I want to give low, then I want to check if people can't allow Shuale to come in, and then we'll cross. Well, I think you get restricted in the way you must ask, and yet the problems are all interrelated. Yeah.
Chairperson, your approach I accept it. But the problem with this, when it comes to consequences on our side, at least the board must be conscious of what is put in front of us.
Your question is not ignored. You certainly have the opportunity. Well, now you can speak without restriction of just focusing on one small area, and yet the issues are broad and all different.
Sir, you see, when you engage the stakeholders, we also want to solicit that they really honor in what they are reflecting. This is the second thing that you are coming back on, trying to solicit what is it that they are telling us. So that when they are saying that they are doing investigation, we should understand that they are dealing with honest people. And that's what they are trying to find out. Because he has presented it as a presenter, but they have been conflicting type of reflections. And the point that I'm trying to get to, it is the real honesty that they will expect us to deal with. I accept what you are saying, but the point was, really, in all what they have seen, the behavior that they've been observing, it is a correct reflection of what we should be expecting from the board. Is the board genuine in answering our questions? Or is it misleading? So when you deal with issues of misleading, that are part of our consequences, we should be very convinced that the board applied by all its best to let us be comfortable with the answers. That's all I was trying to say. Can you see it out of there?
No, that's fine. I hear you, I get you, but no, we should come back to that, give you the opportunity, and everybody else. Hello?
Thank you, Chair. I only have one for now. The other ones I'm going to come back when Honorable Shewani has spoken, because it's almost the same. My one for this part on the key focus areas is 3.2. And it says root cause, lack of understanding of supply chain management requirements. And then your recommendation there is training should be provided. So I just like to know what training provided. If so, can I have attendance registers of the training that was provided? If not, by when will it be done? Thank you.
Thank you, Honorable Chair. I I am deferring to the members of the delegation on that. I have not seen attendance register and teachers report in that regard, but as directors in the FCIP, audit and risk, and the acting GCO would answer.
As I indicated earlier on, we have got assistance from Treasury, who seconded a chief procurement officer to assist us with all the processes and procedure and revise. He is now trying to get advanced training.
I think the question is, and I think it in part flows from what Comrade Kekana raised earlier, you appoint people to the sign appointment letters, are they trained? Yes, they are trained. So the question is, if training took place, can we have physical proof that training did took place? Minutes, attendance, so that we know and we see that, yes. Because if you wait in place, it is going to a point where if we have those things, then maybe the problem is not one of skills, that people do not know what to do. But it might be that people actually just decided to do the wrong thing. So that's where it is going. So if we have people who are trained, show their attendance to just the minute of those training. I think that's what the question is.
Honorable Chair, I think what we should say is that we would, I know that I have had in my engagement taking what is happening in that supply chain management space, I have been informed by the acting chief procurement officer that he's been taking his team through a process of training, ensuring that impressing upon them that it was important for them to comply with the policy on supply chain management as well as the PFMA. What we would do is to ask for that report to be given to us if the acting GCO does not have it.
So that it can be sent to us. Alright, can we hand over to Comrade Shimane? So that we... Yes, Comrade.
Good morning, Chairperson. My apologies for arriving late. I went to the wrong venue. We will go to page 111, the annual report. The point is that we were dealing with a very good item last year on the irregular expenditure. Yes. According to the
111.
Direct the expenditure, item 41. Yeah, when we check in terms of the PFMA, section 61(1)(b), Roman figure 2, the accounting authority did not take a measurable or effective steps to prevent the irregular expenditure to the value of 560 million. And in that regard, there was non-compliance of the law and regulation in terms of the agency. We would want to establish why it was not followed in terms of the law. Thank you.
Thank you, Chairman. Honorable Member. In that period, a number of irregular expenditure happened. The system failed, and they were not even there in some instances. What we have since done is that we put very strict systems, even though the the technology with your petroleum, we have put internal audits to verify everything that is being paid that is above 10 million to actually do a proper property on it. And then anything under 10 million before it's paid, there is a desktop investigation and checking it, all these matters that were mentioned, to ensure that when payment is done, it is a proper regular payment. We admit that there has been a failure in systems and the prevention of irregular expenditure. We have reports that are prepared on a monthly basis to look at irregular expenditure. That has since been reduced, the amount of irregular expenditure, because at the audit committee we insist on a report of irregular expenditure, and when it is discovered, that is most of that, before those systems that we put, we actually taking action on them. And I admit that before, especially in that annual year, the systems were not there, or they were not implemented.
Right. Okay.
Thank you on that response. But what I would want to find out from the agency is that, is there any disciplinary actions which were taken against particular individuals who brought this irregular amount to up to this far? I can understand all the efforts that you have tried, you are correcting the standards, whatever what you are doing, but we just want to check what are the disciplinary actions. Who is that individual who was responsible for this irregular expansion?
Thank you, Honourable Member. We've taken a number of actions. Some employees were dismissed, some were given warnings, some are being still being investigated. We can go through the detail of each and every one of these irregular expenditure. I don't know if you want to take it through according to how they are here in the report.
Yes. I think that will assist, but I do have I think we will make a list of, in terms of which ones here, which are matters. All of them, they do matters, but there's one which I think I must not allow you to list it. I think I should ask it from this side. There was a supplier who was not disqualified, but subsequently appointed despite not submitting pertinent bid documentation, and that amount is amount to the tune of 357.9 million, which in that regard, as form, we really conclude, even though we're going to ask you, we conclude that this is fraud or it's corruption. It's not an irregular expense that just happened. Someone didn't really notice that this was wrong. Because in terms of what the AG has picked up is that there was no any procedure called in this regard. Can you talk about that?
Yes, Honourable Member, this relates to the purchase of the locomotives through the company called Shipambo. The Auditor General raised the fact that there was no tax clearance certificate from one of the parties to the tender. The evaluation criteria was changed because initially we were going out for the list of locomotives, but we changed to outright purchase, and that deviation was not approved. This is the matter that Honourable Members, we had taken to court to set aside this contract, and we are investigating all the likely corruption, as we are saying, and the fraud that could happen. We don't have evidence so far, but we are investigating that matter.
So, maybe in that regard, we assume that it's a subject matter, or should I continue to...
I'll continue, okay.
Okay. Yeah. Because when you refer that the matter is now before court and the contract was awarded to Shivambo. Yes, Shivambo.
Shivambo.
Thank you. Shivambo. Yes. I want you to check with the agency. Do you still have any other projects which the agency has done before with this contractor, or you just only have this one that is in court right now?
Which honourable member is, to my, to the best of my knowledge, this is the one that we're dealing with. There was no other project we did with that.
And are we anticipating that the agency is going to win the case and then government is going to get the money back that has been spent on this project?
Honourable Chair, we have been worked hard on this thing and haven't received legal advice. And on some of the factual matters that the investigators have, which by and large are in the application that is before the court, naturally there will be more detailed evidence in the case, that we have every reason to believe that we've got a strong case. We do, however, cannot assume what the judges would do, but we think we have a strong case.
Thank you. I'll pass through that. Please. Okay. Sure.
No, continue.
Okay. I'll pass through that. I'll just mention a few because I think most of my colleagues wanted to deliberate on the issue of irregular exams. I'm just going to highlight two or three of them. There's the amount of 73.2 million in irregular expenditure, which was incurred because of confinement. Confinements were not documented in the proper supply chain management policy. Your own management policy could not really confine to them what was wrong, what went wrong.
Can you help me, Honourable Member? Are you still page 111?
Page 111 is number 3 from the bottom.
Oh, yes. Thank you, Chair. I found it. This relates to SACO and it relates to AutoPAC, whereby although the board approved the consignment in accordance to PASA SCA policies, there was no evidence that was provided to the Auditor General because the means were not clear about that approval. After the Auditor General had finished the audit, this matter went in front of the board of AutoPAC, which the board confirmed that they indeed approved it, but it was not properly recorded. And they've since corrected that proper recording. So it is now no longer an irregular expenditure because the that board then condoned the error of improper recording of minutes.
Okay, Chairperson, I'll believe that that the AG probably concede to what the agency is saying.
I mean, so the board is in a meeting, the minutes are taken, they are not done properly. In their next board meeting, they don't realize that the minutes are not truly reflecting what they decided upon. And they wait for the Auditor General then to go and say, no, actually, these minutes have been wrongly recorded. men correct.
Yeah, hence, Chairperson, I'm saying probably maybe the AG does concede that there were corrections and then AG agreed. Therefore, it's no more an irregular expenditure. I don't know, Chairperson, with your indulgence, if maybe we can get a highlight from the AG on this regard.
No, I think let's proceed because I don't think that information the corrections would have been done after this report went out. So the Auditor General will probably see it when the audit happens now. But I don't know if the Auditor General wants to.
So, President, this is a consistent problem happening within PAS. It's not a problem of the AG. From the start of our argument and from the presentation by Gerard, it's been that minutes have been disappearing. So there's nothing that I could tell. They're not going to continue. It's a consistent problem.
Maybe in my Chairperson, when we talk about minutes, because it's a challenge to the agents, in the back of my mind, I don't know, maybe it's the company should have a company secretary or falls with the CEO or who takes the minutes, who really. I think that person is supposed to be in all meetings and be able to take minutes. And I think there are various ways of taking minutes. The way we're talking here, I think minutes have been taken. So, in Prasa really, let's see, someone write a sentence and forget, and then there's a next meeting, there's nothing. Who's responsible for taking minutes?
With regard to the procurement processes in the committees of procurement, the secretariat is appointed by the chief procurement officer coming from his office. And from a board perspective, the company secretary, board and his committees, the company secretary take minutes.
So the chief procurement officer is responsible for his or her own secretariat. What happens to those people who are not taking minutes? Because it seems as if it's an issue in this agency. Surely, disciplinary actions must be taken against a particular individual.
No, Commissioner. In the case of AutoPack, the board actually caught in minutes, so there was no problem. I hear you. I'm just saying at a procedural point, the board is not looking at anybody because so there was nothing wrong from that perspective. But from where we're standing, I agree with you. It's just not acceptable. It just does not occur. I wanted to continue.
Okay, Chairperson, I just don't know if maybe you want us to continue on in and have an understanding that in Brasa, minutes is a problem and we accept that. But nevertheless, the time, Chairperson, I will continue. There was an amount of 6.5 million. Which was incurred due to the extension of contract, which was done without the approval of the delegated authority. What is it that has been done to recover the money which was involved in this transaction? And what are the actions taken by the accounting authority against the officials who approve such required amounts?
And this particular matter relates to a supplier contract that was extended prior to obtaining the delegated authority, as you are saying. The employee involved was disciplined, there was a disciplinary process, and the employee involved was dismissed.
Did we recover the money back?
member, due to the fact that we got daily for months because this was about fences and dates, there was daily for money. The work was actually done. However, the process was not properly followed to extend the contract, existing contract. Hence, the employee who was involved in that improper conduct was dismissed.
In the interest of time and sharing, I will pause here on the irregular expenditure. What other members might ask, because I think I have some many interest in terms of asking questions. Should I continue to the next one?
Okay.
Thank you. Again, we are still at page 111, the regular expenditure, which was incurred by the entity. There was an expenditure which was incurred because the entity failed to pay the creditors on time, 80 days. And that's what the PMA says. And that's what the president always says in every state of the nation address, whatever he says, it's required by the law. It's not the phrase, what happened, why.
Thank you, Honorable Member. The issue related to cash flow management. We have now put in place measures that the CFOs, including the group CFO, must deal with issues pertaining to financial prudence in this matter, specifically on this matter at that particular time. Those measures were not followed properly and strictly.
Chairperson, as I understand it, when payment became due for those suppliers, the company did not have cash to pay because of the problems of cash flow at the time. And that caused the delay, which resulted with those escalations for interest and other matters.
There was an expenditure which incurred due to payment of an advisory contract to a former advisory chief. Can you get a clarity on that one? An amount of 2.6 million. And focus on this for
thank you, Tim. This relates to the former employee of PASA who left and a contract was signed for him to give advisory services. However, no processes were followed in terms of that contract. Also, there was no evidence of value for money for that contract. We have since terminated this contract, and we are in the process of trying to recover using legal processes to recover the money. We have obtained advice on how to recover that money.
I think I'm satisfied that I'm sure they are recovering the money. I think that's what I will applaud. I think I'm happy about that response. There was an expenditure which was incurred because the entity failed to follow proper processes in the business of an activity. And these processes which were followed or which were not followed, there was a deviation in that regard. which has got an amount of about 6 million. Can we talk about the blocks?
Yes, I can, Honourable Member. This is an employee who was indeed deceased in an improper manner. This matter went to court, and Prasa defended the matter. The Prasa lost the case, and the amount that you see there was a court order. That employee has since been has come back to Prasa in accordance to the court order. What the court also ordered was that the group CEO who actually was involved in this process must pay the legal cost of Prasa. We are in the process of getting legal advice about how to get that money back, because the employee and the group CEO then has left. So we are in the process of recovering at least the legal cost.
I can't follow you. Prasa lost the case, and then the employee is back in Prasa, and then you are trying to recover the money,
the
legal cost, and then that employee is at work at the same post. Why he was dismissed, he or she was dismissed, was a vendetta or out of us, or I just want to, so that you are able to be at the same level of understanding.
Chair, we would not be able to say there was a vendetta or not. All we can say is that Prasa failed to demonstrate to the court that the dismissal of the employee was done in a regular manner and in a lawful manner. And once the board had ruled that we were wrong, we did not want to be in contempt of court. We had to allow the employee to come back. But is he in the same position? No. Because whilst he had been dismissed, there was a restructuring that took place of an organization that he was the CEO of. And it was split into two. It became Prasa Crest and Interside. When it came back, Prasa Crest already had a confirmed CEO. But Interside was still in the process of trying to recruit a CEO. So we negotiated with the employee that on the same salary that he had been receiving, that he goes and works as the CEO of Interside. The matter was discussed with the board of Interside. The board of Interside has agreed to take him in that position, because once the restructuring had happened, we could not reinstate him to the position he occupied before. But we could only return him to employment.
Okay.
Thank you, Chairperson. I'll pass that on to the Ministry of Exchange, and then go to the financial health of the agency.
Okay.
We'll go to page 55. Item number 11 on the financial sustainability of the subsidiary. Are we there? The subsidiary company, the Interside Asset Investment, SOC LTD, incurred an operating loss of 28 million, that was 2014, 21 million for the year review. and the loss is primarily attributed to the budget revenue from the property investment, that such projects and commercial projects, which are not materializing and failure to collect the budgeted revenue. Why the agency could not be able to foresee this loss that was coming upon.
Thank you, Honourable Member. The challenge is because of the nature of the project that they are doing. By their nature, they take longer to materialize. And this was the case in point. The subsidiary and the agency had anticipated that this could possibly happen. The measures that they had put in place to try and mitigate that also did not materialize, resulting to this particular loss.
So, agreeing that the contributing factors are the social and the social economic factors which resulted in this regard, are we admitting to that one?
He's an added speaker, Honorable Member.
Honorable Member, can I add something to that? My understanding also is that there were plans and strategies that were put through to the subsidiaries, which is ourselves in the office of the former CEO. Those modules have since been approved, and we believe that this delay the fact that the strategies and business models have been approved will improve the results going forward.
Yes. So the agency could not have even projected that there's going to be a loss when they're initiating this project, this step.
What I'm saying in addition to what he is saying, that the additional problem was caused by the delay in approving their business model, which now has since been approved.
Who was responsible to have approved this?
The group CEO of Plaza. So Plaza was responsible for the delay, which then I'm saying now we have since approved those business plan, and this should then improve. The situation should improve.
The reason I'm asking that who was responsible, as you said we are dealing with the issue of the next financial issue of 2014-15, we are dealing with the past of this committee. So it's in the interest of the committee to want to know who was responsible. Even though there have been measures that have been put in place to correct the situation, but it's in the interest of the committee to know who was responsible for that. And
thank you, Member. The person responsible for signing this or approving this was the former acting group CEO. And since the new acting group CEO has been signed to this business model.
Chapter 1, I'll leave that one to the members. There was a loss of 1.1 billion. Because of inadequate revenue generated through operations and government grants, as well as poor expenditure management. $1.1 billion for loss. Inadequate revenue generated. That's what the age is saying. Page 97, I think. Yeah. start from page 97, from the paragraph. On the 14th October 2015, Rafa entered into an agreement with Gibela Rail Transport Consortium for the design, supply, manufacture, and when you come to the site, then let's go to that amount. If you can get us an explanation in this regard.
Honourable Member, I, if I look at the paragraph you're mentioning, it relates to the contract that was initially 52.53 billion but ended up being 59 billion. What happened in that instance is that when tender was finalized and the submission of the tender to government, the amount of the commitment and the tender was 53 billion. Mm. However, at the signing of the contract, because of the exchange rate, at that time, at the close of the finance of this contract, the euro had gone up to 59 billion. So that's the forex increase, or the weakening of the rand.
Well, Shabatan, I'm not an economist. On that one, you find me. I don't really, because I'll do what to add to that. Because we are dealing with big projects, which got a lot of money, and I don't know. If you want, like, when you want to buy a car or buy something, they'll say, do you want fixed interest? Or do you don't want fixed interest? I think maybe if you could take that regard in terms of other government, not to say that maybe when the rent weakens, then a lot of money should be paid because we suffer the dire consequences.
Thank you, Honorable Member. This was during the time when the deal was still being negotiated. And the budget that had been allowed as a maximum was at 53. But at financial close of that transaction, there has been CPI as well as forex movement to the tune of 59 billion rand. Treasury, when they approved it and they issued a gazette, they confirmed that situation in terms of the Minister of Transport or Minister of Finance.
Thank you, Chair. Yes, I just want to confirm the program was thought the budget was initially allocated to the passenger rail agency at 40 billion for the new running stock. It took some time to run the procurement process. The entity decided to go out on tender at 51 billion. That was convinced that there's some capital money that they could shift towards this program. Unfortunately, with the depreciation of the rand, by the time the tender had closed and the financial documentation was being prepared, the 51 had shifted to 63. At that point, the Treasury indicated that we will have to reduce the costs of this program as it's become unaffordable. The Minister then concurred with the Minister of Transport to say that the commitment of the fiscus for a long-term commitment which the PFI requires the Minister to sign off will only be 53. This was after financial closure. But it excludes the CPI adjustments over 10 years and it excludes a portion of foreign exchange which the Treasury says the country will contribute to. The first, I think, half of the trend will be that foreign exchange will be carried by the supplier. We also noted this paragraph and we are currently working with our people in public finance to brief the minister so that there is clarity in terms of what the 53 billion was. The 53 for our side was another that we could track the spending of this program over the 10 years so that we don't have
ivory furniture.
Yeah, no, thank you, Chairperson. I think I'll be, other members will come to it. I think I'll be just rounding off Chairperson to say that according to the AG, that these conditions of practicing themselves on the financial sustainability of this subsidiary indicates the existence of material uncertainty that may have significant doubts of the subsidiary ability to operate as a going concern. I think I'm done with this and just to highlight the going concern on the on this subsidiary. Maybe the chairperson will talk about it.
No, I don't think maybe let's see a response. Going downhill, are we looking to go towards a guarantee or are we managing things so that they were sustainable? I think that's the essence of the question.
If I understood the honorable member, he was referring to the subsidiary interface. As we have said earlier on, that we have now put in place programs that needed to be approved. They have been approved. More business has also been acquired. We believe that we are on an upward trajectory.
Okay. That's fine. You're done. Okay.
Thank you for the opportunity.
Vincent. Okay. All right.
You have to convince us about this upward mobility. As part of your strategy was to assist the ordinary people to be able to make use of the platform. And from that comes the auditor general's report. It doesn't seem like that. That's why your funding is not healthy. You have not been able to generate enough revenue on your own to be able to provide for your own product. How do you come to such a conclusion? Because as it's been reflected by the auditor general, the total dependence on listen what the treasury is saying. What then? That's from 40 billion to 63 billion. How did it happen? It should happen in that way, if ever, that on an upward road. For me, it's a point of interest that I'm interested to know. How do you come to such a conclusion? And when ordinarily, through accidents and through everything, it seems as if you are performing very well in making the ordinary people quite happy about your system.
Through you, Chair, the member makes various comments on different aspects. Firstly, on the subsidiary aspect, which I have responded to. Then he makes a comment on the 53 billion rand, which is the transaction on the acquisition of the new rolling stock, as we have explained, as to how it happened. We believe that based on the government gazette, which was signed by the minister, that indeed it was allowed to end up at 59 billion.
Which gazette? I'm saying which one. I have this one. It says 53.
Yes. 304. Is it from 304? It's because of the 17 April 2015, number 37575.
Yeah, but this one is 3 billion.
The one letter I would want to read to you, Chair, it says paragraph 1,
yeah.
As indicated, the financial commitment of PRASA shall not exceed the 53 billion in 2045 for the duration of the manufacturer and supply agreement, subject to price adjustment due to CPI and 4/16 escalation as contemplated by the manufacturer and the supplier agreement. When the financial close and deal was closed, it was at the 59 billion rand, subject to those two factors.
As a result of those two factors?
As a result of those two factors. With regard to with regard to the third aspect, which I think the honourable member is referring to, is broadly in on CASA as an entity and its financial situation. If I understood that, if I may check that this is the correct statement that the member is making.
Look, I hear what you are arguing and what you are trying to be technical. The point I'm making to you, which I'm putting at your responsibility, is throughout the performance of CASA as an institution. And the fact that there's such a loss, and the fact that there's quite a lot of fraudulent expenditures that are happening to and fro. The fact that your own human resource, what the auditor general will tell us, is not consistent. You see, you employ and dismiss, no procedure. I'm just saying to you, the institution is not healthy for itself to claim that it is keeping our people healthy. That's the bottom line I'm putting to you. Other people heard about these services. Because what I'm reading from what the auditor general says that even your own funding, you are not reliant on yourself as an entity. You are dependent outside because you are not able to generate enough revenue. That's what I'm really reading. Is the institution running properly? So half of the questions that we'll be getting answers about are more internal driven questions. We've got nothing to do with issues of how much the public is getting value for this money from you.
To you, Chair, indeed the organization has challenges. They emanate from various areas. One is the fact that our infrastructure is old and therefore it is failing quite consistently. Secondly, our rolling stock as well is old. It's a 1956 technology. It is also giving us serious problems from that point of view. The supply of spares, because we are dealing with old technology, is also a serious challenge. There is vandalism of our assets, stealing of cables, copper cables, sabotaging the fiber in our environment is a serious issue as well, contributing to this challenge. Of course, the issues that have been raised here from an irregular expenditure point of view in the organization is also a factor, as it has been said and confirmed by many here. Given all those challenges, the confidence on our commuter, I can confirm that it is not where it should be in terms of helping it with the service that we are having. We also run an open system, which then makes it difficult for us to collect the revenues that we are supposed to be collecting. The question is, what are we doing about this thing? As an organization, from management and the board, we are looking at putting up a turnaround strategy. We're looking at coming out with what is the appropriate funding model of this organization. We're looking at dealing with all the inefficiencies that are prevailing within the organization. Perhaps an appropriate question is, for how long do you think this is going to take us to come back to a level that will be satisfactory to us as the suppliers of the services and to our community who are the recipients of the services that we are offering? There is a challenge in the organization. Thank you.
I would ask saying that also, given that in the fruitless expenditure, the board itself has been taking it unprocedurally. Is part of your problem. That's to give us a sense of how much we have to trust the board as we are capable, because it seems as if from the fruitless expedition, in it there was not following its own procedure on how does it succeed. Is that what he said? Could we say that somebody should have a board of this nature?
May I just add on what I was dealing with? I think I left one critical aspect. We have a mandate to supply long distance services. And that mandate also contributes significantly to the losses of the organization to a tune of almost 800 billion rand. So when you look at the 1.1 billion, you need to look and understand it in that context that we do have an unfunded mandate. As I said earlier on, we are pretending and looking at various issues so that we...
Yeah, no, that's point. Point, please. Let's talk to the last question.
Honorable Chair, we've been asked, can this transport that receives gifts, which then give rise to irregular expenditure? Normally, Honorable Chair, companies do have corporate gifts that they give. They normally have a budget for that. And the issues of corporate gifts are not the decisions that are made by the board. In this particular instance, the board had come into office on the 1st of August. At the end of that year, it must have been around November, directors were given a gift, which we were informed is a tradition that was followed in the company. It turned out that those gifts would then be listed as having been procured irregularly. The board had no role to play in that regard. But having seen that this can compromise the integrity of the board, we have decided as a board that we don't want any corporate gifts from the company going forward. And we didn't have corporate gifts last year, and we will not receive any corporate gifts into the future. But we also think that although the money is given at the figure articulated there, quite clearly it was not for the directors alone. This is generally corporate gifts were bought, that the directors also were given gifts.
Which company gave the gift? I mean, I've said before,
no, I'm saying Prasa. It was given by Prasa.
It was Prasa
giving to the board and other people that they would have given to.
Thank you, Chair. Chair, can I just go back to an earlier conversation, just get clarity? I wanted to get in there, but I thought, wait. Acting CEO, when one of my colleagues asked the question about the Auditor General's finding on the unsolicited bid, where the processes were not followed. And the question was, why did that happen? Did I hear you correctly by saying that it was simply negligence on the side of PASA? Is that how you responded to that question? I don't care to hear that. I want you to change your mind. I want you to say to me, how did you respond to that one?
Exactly as you have said, Honorable Man.
Thanks. You see, at our level and at your level, we can't accept an answer that says 91 million rand, we never followed procedures simply because of negligence. Can you tell me who was responsible for that negligence? Because I think that person must be fired. Let's be honest on this one, Chair. If that person is still within the sector, that person must go. It's time for us to name and shame. Who was responsible for that? Could you tell me that?
On investigation, we discover that the adjudication committee that was supposed to adjudicate on this, having followed the treasury rule that it is intended, this matter was not adjudicated by the committee. This matter was then decided upon by the former CPO who signed the motivation, which was later signed by the former group CEO.
Who is the CPO? Give me the name of the CPO that signed it. We know who's the CEO. Who's the CPO?
Joseph Pungula.
Right. So, for our understanding, for our records, Pungula and the ex CEO with the people that approved this unsolicited bet for 91 million rand. And the board at the time accepted it. You see, people, ultimately, the accounting authority is the board. The CEO and the CFO and all those people are functionaries of the board. It's you, the board, whoever the board is, that is ultimately accountable. And I think we have to get to the point where the accounting authority ultimately must be held accountable. That's why I'm asking the question. After these two individuals did that, did they then take it to the board and did the board approve? I'm just trying to understand the process.
They delegated authority, and the group CEO is got a delegated authority to approve up to 100 million rand. So this was below the radar of the board.
Then our understanding, it ended at that level, because that's where it was. Thank you. Just wanted clarity on that one, sir, and we will deal with it accordingly. Can I then get what I wanted to deal with? firstly, now let's start with this one first. Again, in the previous interaction, the last two questions, well, let me ask one as the chair asked. In the first one, there was talk about an ex-employee who didn't fulfill the contract to the tune of 2.2 million. And the intention is to recover that money. We want to seek legal opinion. Can you tell me what was the advice that you received? And let me put it to you simply. You see, we are of the view that if that person is a state employee and he has or she has done something in contravention, we think you start taking his or her pension, because that's what we have. Now I want to ask the question, when you say you've got legal advice to recover that 2.2, whatever the figure is, what was the legal advice that you received?
Thank you, Honourable Member. This relates to a gentleman who was our former group CFO. A contract for 5 years. His contract is about 2.5 or 3 years or so. There was a discussion where he was paid off the entire of his contract. Having paid him the entire of his contract, I'm not privy to the basis of that. Having paid out his entire contract, he was then appointed as a financial advisor of the organization. In him having been appointed,
he was an employee, he got a golden handshake, he came back as a financial advisor. Is that what you think, sir?
That is exactly what I am saying to you, Honorable Lama.
Honorable Lama, can I just come in there? The board was informed that he came back as an financial advisor. However, when looking at the contract, it said something else. The contract said he is advising the strategy manager, division manager. However, that when we asked that divisional manager, have you ever received any advice from this person, he didn't know what they're talking about. This is why I said there was no value for money, and that is why the AG mentioned that it's a fruitless expenditure. Notwithstanding the other fact that we had given this person an amount to the balance of his contract,
right.
And then we're also employing them.
All right. All right. Minister, I know I shouldn't be asking you this question, but clearly there's just something wrong. Clearly there's something, I don't want to respond, I'm just saying clearly there's something wrong here. That somebody gets a golden handshake, leaves the organization. This is what we call javelin in Hauden. You leave this guy, you go, and the department comes and says to Parliament, this is what we've done, somebody have did it. I think when Minister responds, I mean, when she, I would imagine it would be a time to close to her, but she can deal with the matter. But this is something that really, 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 we just cannot condone. We really can't condone the type of thing. Really, because we're talking about financial year 2015. This is not many years ago. These people are alive.
they are in South Africa, they probably would see the employer of the state. I'm saying we could probably find them within the employer of the state. We can't allow this thing to... This practice is dangerous. That's all I'm saying, sir. So I just wanted clarity on that one. If I go to the second one, then, sir, it's the same thing. I mean, we had an employee fired illegally, not illegally, unfairly, went to court, won his court case. We were forced to reinstate him. We're trying to now recover the money from the person or the HR department that did the wrong thing so that we lost money. Who did HR invest? Who is the person that did this thing? And again, how are we trying to recover that money? I mean, really, we can't come here, Chairperson Molefe. We can't come here to Scopa for 3 times and say to us, we are busy investigating and it's ending. It can't continue anymore. We want a situation where November 2015 this thing was reported, it's 6 months later, somebody must have paid the price. We just can't be still investigating. We've got legal advice, we're waiting for legal opinion for somebody who deliberately broke the law. So can we get a sense who did this thing and why it's taking so long?
Chair, the dismissal irregularly of the employee was effected by the former CEO, group CEO of Prasa. And when the court ruled in favor of that employee had to be paid all the salary that was due to him for that period that he did not work, because he would have earned that money as an employee, and I think it amounted to a little over 6 million. Then of course, the court had ruled also that the former CEO who dismissed him violated the law and therefore he should be personally liable. The board of the time took a view that because he was acting on behalf of the company, he should not pay, that the company should pay the legal costs. The legal costs. Now, the reality is that the board has no standing to reverse the decision of the court.
Okay.
So when the board considered this matter, we came to the conclusion that we can't accept that condonement that says, don't pay, let the company pay. We reversed that decision of that board. So our legal department was instructed to recover the said money. So that matter is in process now. I can ask the group CEO to indicate precisely what is the status now.
That's fine, sir.
No, but I think that last part is what you're asking. What is the status?
I could also verify with the legal department, but it has been said that there isn't even instruction to institute the recovery of that money through our lawyers.
Has that been done?
The instruction was given to the legal department. I'll follow up into exactly where it is, the letters and of summons or the letters of demand.
When was that, when you last checked that the instructions have been given?
We think it was around November last year, November, December last year, when it was that instruction was issued by the court.
Almost end of February now, and she has no idea what has happened.
Sure. The legal opinion was solicited by the court. The court instructed somebody to give them a legal or to follow legal proceedings. That legal department, the legal advisor, is that person an employee of Prasa? And is that person here?
It's an employee, but they are not here.
Thank you. Can we ask somebody to go out and phone that person and ask them how are the processes? Because if we let them go out and make a phone call, and you come back and you tell us that we have sent the letter out or something like that. I mean, that's simple. You could do that. And you could come back to us before the end of the business. if that's all right with you, sir.
Yeah, no, that's fine, except that I don't know how things are processed. How things are processed to the institution, how information and reports go up. But like up to this point, there is nothing that indicates whether there is movement or not. I'm just flagging that to say, yeah, okay, that's fine. Continue.
Fine, we can make that point, because that's the point that I was trying to make. You can't come unprepared to Scopa. You can't come unprepared to Scopa, so that we must say that it's in the offer somewhere. I've got just two more questions here, but I want to go to the unauthorized that my colleague was talking about. But before I go there, she raised the question about, there's a undisclosed conflict of interest with a company called Batalala, something like that. Could somebody tell us what business is Batalala? It was 8.1 million. And undisclosed conflict of interest by a member of the BEC, I would imagine that's the Best Evaluation Committee. But I just want to first of all know, in what industry is Batalala? If somebody could indicate that before I ask the question.
It's construction.
Thank you very much. Does somebody know the nature of the conflict of interest of this Best Evaluation member? What was the nature of the conflict of interest? Does his wife work in the company? Does his father work in the company? Does he own the company? What was the nature of the conflict of interest?
There was a relationship between the bidder at Batalala Construction and the employee of TASA, Konabi Lekonzo, and who was based on the company in the lecture of the CIPC conducted by the AG. This construction company, Batalala Construction, indicated that they did not have any relationship with the person employed by state who may be involved in evaluation in the deed. Contrary to this declaration, Ms. Temba, Msoli, has a common business interest with Sonabile Council in another company called Nemane Engineering CC. Mr. Konzo has since been dismissed for not declaring that interest.
Have we done anything to Batalala for the 826? What was the consequence? I understand the consequence to the BDC, to the board member. But the tender document was submitted by a company. That company also didn't disclose that it got somebody inside, I would assume. Therefore, they misled. What has happened to that company? The question I'm going to ask you after this is, why haven't you terminated the contract? What happened to that company? In terms of having misled to the tune of 8.6 million rand. Because surely they have also said, we are making a tender, but we've got so-and-so that is within your organization. It's their responsibility also. What has happened to that company? Why have we not closed or terminated that thing? Because they've misled. And finally, why are they not blacklisted? Or should we, Treasury, propose that they be one of those that are blacklisted? Because it's deliberate flouting of the rules. Can you answer the question about what has happened to this company? Or are you intending to terminate the contract?
Do you intend to terminate the contract?
When?
I would have to go back and find out where the process is.
I'm not going to speculate whether it's out the door, Chair. All I'm saying is, you know, the audit report is signed on the 11th of November. By that time, if you understand how the audit general works. At that point, the Auditor General would have been speaking to you in terms of his management letters, in terms of whatever queries he has, before he or she finally signs it off. That's how I understand it. So, before the 11th of November, you would have had all these facts. You come to Parliament 6 months later. You don't know what has happened. You intend terminating it. I don't know, Chief. if you understand, and I'm saying it all due respect, Minister, the Public Finance Management Act says that the accounting officer must do everything in his or her power to make sure that we look after the resources. What I'm hearing here is a very lack of that duty. And the PMA says that the punishment for that is 5 years in prison or a fine. And I'm suggesting that we make an example of PRASA and of correctional services and of all those that are what you normally see real offenders. That's the problem. I'll come to you. I'm saying because that is what we're hearing. I mean, the law is on our side. The law is on our side. That is, if somebody has done it, early on we heard it was pure negligence. Then we hear that this, we can't allow this to happen. When the law is on our side, I think that people must pay for it. So that's the point that I'm making here. On Pasalala. And we'll allow them to respond. I just wanted to find that out first. Following the line that my colleague met, can I then go to two specific ones? You have a situation where you have extension for KE Daniels for 6.6 million. You extended the contract without approval. And then you've got a 58 million rand for SA Fenton Gate. You extended it without approval. And remember earlier on we spoke about trading and so on. I want to make a point first and then come to you. In our years here as SCOPA, departments, ministers have, in thinking that they will be able to get away with this, placed between contract extension, scope creep, and variance of specification, all to benefit his company. You find that the tender originally was for 10 rand. By the time it's done, it's 10 million rand. And then they say it's specification variances. Or it's scope creep, and in this case it's a contract extension without authorization. And somebody explained to us, how is it possible that you can extend a contract without authorization, even if you delegated that responsibility to somebody else? How is it possible? How is it possible? And maybe I should put it on the record, say that one or two of these companies is guilty of this thing in more than one department. In more than one department. Unfortunately for us here, we have a helicopter view. These people only see department of a new ministry, only see your department. So you almost think that it's only happening in your department. We see the entire government. So we are able to pick up things that this person is doing it here, is doing it here, is doing it there. And one of these companies are doing it in all these things. That's why I'm asking the question, how is it possible that there could be an extension without the normal approval to the tune of 60 odd million rand? Somebody could just explain that to us.
I'm going to talk about the KE Daniels that you've mentioned.
Well, I think it's 58.
This is an extension, as you mentioned, from 1.1 million to 6.6 million. And the value of the invoice have actually since gone to 14 million, as you mentioned. This happened without a proper approval by the group CEO, and the payment was done after the expiry of the contract. This contract expired. The contract was terminated on the 30th of September 2014. Now, how that happened? It's managers who, with help of approval, just extend the contract. But disciplinary hearing has been taken on those managers, and one of them is on suspension.
Is the suspension the result of the disciplinary process?
Yes.
How does that work? You take a person for a GC
and... Okay, it's on suspension, and the process is
the disciplinary action is in progress, Chair. One of the employees has since resigned.
What do you mean when I say the TC is in progress?
It means that we instituted it as disciplinary action and the employees on suspension.
No, I understand this is painful. I just want to give up more. Because if you say that it's not thing is in progress, that would say it's planned. Can we process in June, August, to September? When did that start? When is it likely to finish?
Chairperson, I attempted to get the actual position from the head team group CEO. It's an operational he does not he doesn't remember the
who has expired.
She's
what I'm saying,
Chair, is that
doesn't have effect with him now. On this matter.
It also became the hearing is next ego. That's what he does at the
end. Who has the teaching? Well, you see, that's what we want here. We don't want generalization, we want the team. So that we can deal and work on the basis of teacher's information. Otherwise you know person suspended for 20 months.
It was the original manager of the Eastern Cape together with the CEO of Passarail. They will have the details on it.
Sir, I'm still trying to understand this thing, sir. We go in with 1.1 million rand. At some point it goes to 6 million rand. It's now 14 million rand. And I asked the question, how is it possible that was done? Nobody responded to me. Somebody signed a check. And you sign a check on the basis of this is the source document. Because I can't pay if I don't have an invoice. That invoice relates to a contract that says it should be 1 million rand. We go to 6 million rand. You're now saying to us it's 14 million rand. From a 1 million rand contract. This is losing. This is losing. There's no other way of putting it. This is losing. And I'm asking the question, how is it possible? How is it possible that you sit here and you do that and open differently, Chair? I am becoming frustrated. What must Parliament do other than to apply the law? Because this is an opportunity for you to influence us. In the absence of influencing us, we are going to apply the law. We are going to apply the law. So I'm asking you to influence me in my recommendation. How is it possible to move from 1 million to 40 million and nobody in the entire industry or in the entire department can pick it up as a problem? Nobody in the entire department can pick that up as a problem. I'm just asking, I don't know how to take it forward, but I'm raising that point. It's the same point I'm going to raise with the other company, and then I'm going to raise my head.
No, let's deal with the other company, and then we can tie it down.
Fine. Could you then respond to, so I'm going to ask the same question about the other company. If you could tell us, what was the original contract? On what basis was it extended? Because it says here, all this, and that one talks about 58 million rand. Contract extended prior to obtaining approval from delegated authority. And that was from the technical department. If somebody could explain, was it the same process? What was the original contract? And how long has the thing gone on? 58 million.
I dealt with it earlier, Honourable Member, that it relates to fences. And employee who did not have authority simply told the company to do more than they were supposed to. And he was supposed to follow a process of obtaining approval from the former acting group CEO. When this was picked up, the action was taken against this employee and he since was dismissed. The reason I understand that we have to pay this amount is that the company went to court
and obtain a court order for us to pay the company. So that is how we got to make this change. It's my understanding. And your question of how it happened is just an employee who did what was
but
way
beyond. Is the company still contracted to a person?
Yes, it is still contracted to the person. This contract is one of those contracts that the former group CEO terminated. It was then the contract took the matter to court. The court ruled in their favor. We then reinstated the contract emanating from the court order, and they are continuing with the completion of the work that they were supposed to complete.
I'm not a lawyer, Chair, but if I read this thing, it says the contract was extended prior to obtaining approval. You are saying to me that the service provider continued doing the work on the basis of some advice he got for somebody. That was given without approval. Was that a correct and a legal instruction? Now, I'm not challenging the court, I'm just asking Chairperson Molife, so that I understand. Because we are saying so-and-so doesn't have the authority to do it. He goes ahead and instructs somebody to do it. That person does it. That person takes us to court and says, well, on the basis of he or she that doesn't have authority, they gave it to me, I went and I did the job, and therefore I want money. What is the difference between the instruction coming from this person or the instruction coming from the receptionist? If the receptionist had gone and said to Elephant and Gate, continue. Because then orthodox, and I'm simplifying it by saying that. Or maybe not the receptionist, but let's say the foreman of that contract. I'm saying Parliament must begin to apply its mind. And you must also begin to apply your mind. That we can't have organizations that take us to court. Take money that we can use to build houses and to build schools. Take us to court and still have the audacity to come and do business with us. That's what's happening. So, that's the point that I'm making here, and I'm saying that, again, when the Minister and Chairperson Molife and others respond, you'll be given an opportunity to influence our recommendation. You're not going to tell us what to do in our recommendation, but it'll give an opportunity to influence it. I think you've got a sense where Parliament is coming from around these matters. Thanks, Chair.
What I'm going to tell around this particular cover is you say that the four group CEO terminated the contract, but on the other hand, you say an unauthorized person extended, meaning that the contract that had ended, somebody who was unauthorized extended it, and the company took you to court on the basis that the group CEO had no right to terminate the contract that was extended by an unauthorized person. Is that the logic of flow of things? Is that how it went? Because we remember this thing was in papers about payments and this and that and this and that. So was it demand that they should pay $8 million? Or they took you to court that extends their current contract as now, which is beyond the financial year under review.
No, that is not the logic. The logic is that the tender initially followed the right processes. It was a tender valued at slightly over 200 million rand. It was then approved by the then board. When it was during its implementation stage, this general manager gave them work and extended the scope by 58 million rand without having followed the processes. Okay? And it doesn't matter whether
he saw the need of it or not, but he did not follow the processes. He was then dismissed. The company concerned had done the work. The boss at that time condoned the 58 million rand. Subsequent to that, there was a dispute of payment. During that dispute of payment, the former group CEO issued an instruction to the CEO of technical department to terminate the contract. The contract was then terminated. The company concerned, SHNCC, took the matter to court on two accounts. On the fact that they had not been paid, and secondly, that the contract has been unlawfully terminated. The court ruled in their favor, asked us to pay them, and also to reinstate the contract. We looked into all the facts in there. We then reinstated the contract. We asked them to continue to complete the work, and they are in the process. That's the logic of this situation.
Can I then ask a final question, Chair? In terms of what you just explained to us, that our hands are bound by the court and we must accept that. Can you indicate to us that at the end of the day, how much will we have paid these people? Bearing in mind that you said the initial contract was 200 million. We're talking about a 58 million rand extension. Work is carrying on. I'm assuming as work goes on, we're going to have to pay them for that other work. Have you got an idea of how much at the end of the day? Because you don't seem to be in control of the situation. You're saying we are now bound by the court. At the end of the day, or next year this time, how much would that contract have cost us ultimately? I don't want to speculate, but I'm saying surely you could give us some indication. Because at some point we must cut our losses if it's going to be double. We must cut our losses. We can't sit here and say this is what we're talking here about taxpayer money. I go and account to my people about what government is doing with their money. Maybe you don't, sir. Maybe you don't. But these people here are held accountable. That's why we're holding you accountable. So you must indicate to us how much, so that we are able to, as parliamentarians, go back and say, but so far and no further. Can you indicate to us what do you think the ultimate cost is going to be on this particular one?
It should be around the 260 million rand, including the 58 million rand that we are talking about. But I must add the fact that they have subsequently issued papers to claim images for the time when they were not working on the contract.
How much do you think this company is going to cost us for this particular contract? Because the more you talk to us, the more it shows us that this person who extended it illegally has cost the South African taxpayer lots of money. Lots and lots of money. It's no point. We will go and find this individual if we have to go and find him. You think it's 200 million, it's now 260, and you say they are still charging us for damages, and this individual is roaming around South Africa somewhere. It can't be, sir. It can't be. You're going to carry the can ultimately as the accounting officer of this matter. I can assure you about that. You're going to carry the can. Can you tell us how much it's going to cost and who's that person? Because I think the President has spoken enough in terms of we must get to the bottom of dealing with this type of thing in South Africa. And SCOPA is going to lead that charge. Let me tell you, SCOPA is going to lead the charge with dealing with corruption.
The number, as I said earlier on, from a contract value point of view, including the 58 million, it is estimated to be around 260 million. The claim for damages, we have refuted that, and we have asked them that they must prove that claim. That's the claim of about 50 million rand that they are claiming are for damages, over and above that situation.
Alright, I think for me the issue is the controversy around this company, SA7K. I don't know who owns it. I just don't know. Like he indicated,
we will be dealing with another department where they are just as controversial in that department as they are here. And now the question becomes, who are these people? Who do they know? And why would they have this kind of audacity? But we will come to that later. No? Yeah.
I'm still a bit surprised by this irregular expenditure of 500 million that could have ultimately given 100 houses to people that don't have houses. And it's just created casually like that. I don't see urgency in the agency, the way they are responding to questions. That is just going to be solved. You're going to sit with the same problem again next time. I can guarantee you that. Because why? You have a problem with record keeping. And that is key. If you can't keep records, then you can't check certain things. And if you can't check certain things, by the end of the day, you will just see everything is falling apart. That is your main problem. It's either you purposely don't want to keep records because it will make it harder to track, or you don't have the skills to keep records. So that needs to be sorted. You cannot come here. I mean, we have a lot of things to do. 2 o'clock, we have to go back to the house, go and debate there. We have a lot of work to do. And then you come here, you come and present things like casually like that. It shows undermining on our time. And that, for me, I cannot handle it. My first question, what is your mandate as the board? If you can tell me what is your mandate, and then I will come back with a follow-up. If you can first tell me what is your mandate as the board.
Very briefly, in a sentence or two.
Well, to summarize, really, it's the mandate of the board is to implement the directives of the government, and that would include managing prudently the resources that are allocated to the board, I mean to the company, to the agency, and accounting to this house in respect of those resources entrusted to the company. Actually, we would operate in accordance with the Legal Succession Act, the GFMA, and the Constitution of the government.
Thank you, Chair. If that is your mandate, right, the way you have beautifully put it in that many English you have just talked, how didn't you see, or how didn't you could have projected that you're going to run a loss of, or irregular expenditure, not run a loss, the irregular expenditures of over 500 million? How do you explain that as a board? And then why should the minister still keep you as a board if you have lost over 500 million? To what? Not keeping correct documents and all of these other reasons that was noted here. Why should you still be tomorrow board members of PRAS?
Honourable Chair, we have raised this question repeatedly. We have investigated these matters as the board, and we are responding in a range of ways to these irregularities. Civil action to recover some of the monies, criminal litigations, which are before the courts in this country, putting in place the new chief procurement officer in collaboration with National Treasury to make sure that there are better controls in the organization. The board, I mean, we can go through the discussions of the board on a number of these issues. It will be on record that the board does deal with these things. The honorable member previously said we'll apply the law. We welcome that. Let the law be applied. If in the course of that, we are caught in that process. We are happy to account, but we will be able to demonstrate that good where we are. We are addressing these matters. It has taken long. The reality is that there has been a culture in the organization of lawlessness, of fraudulent behavior, of hiding things from the boards, from the directors of the company, misleading the boards. That has been the culture, and that culture we are busy ending in the organization. We have been accused by honorable members of parliament who want to deal with some of these issues. They say, but you are now getting too much involved as if you are becoming operational. But we deal with these issues because when we ask for information, we don't get it on time. And therefore, the board is forced to be more involved in demanding these things and holding more meetings than ordinarily we would be holding. In a normal company, the board meet on a quarterly basis and their committees meet. And when they meet, they have reliable information from management. It's not the culture in this organization. It's the culture that we are changing. Should the minister keep us in office? Well, the minister knows what we have been doing, but it's a call. And it's a call of the cabinet to decide. But we are working on responding to these measures.
Okay.
The last one, straight honorable point. You're going to get your chance. the last one, Chair. You have talked about earlier about disciplinary action of all of this one, still on the irregular expenditure. I'm especially interested in the one payment made to supplier without contract. Those ones. Can I please have records of those disciplinary actions? And as Honorable Smith alluded earlier on, we want to know these individuals. We want to see records, if you can please forward it to the portfolio secretary, on all of the irregular expenditures, the type of disciplinary actions that was taken. Thank you.
Just note that question so that it's not lost. But it's more a suggestion that on the, I think maybe let's put it this way, on the regular expenditure, can we have a report that says on this one, this is what is done in terms of investigation, this is what we found, if there have been disciplinary measures being taken, where are they, what has happened, so that we have a.
Thank you. I must be very quick on the word. Chair, I will be very brief. Many of my colleagues have covered the ground. I know that my colleague Oliver Ross has a lot of questions. I'd like to build forth on your, I was going to ask for exactly what you asked. I'm a little bit disappointed that you met with Tarso last year and that we haven't circumvented and that you frankly have come to the hearing pretty unprepared for what we were going to ask you, sir. I would have expected that list to be here, sir. There's all the regular expenditure, and we've actually had to do it ourselves. But I would have expected this. I'd like to add to what the Chair has asked for, and this is going to lead on to my next question, which unfortunately is going to be quite hard. I'd like to know, the list I have in front of me says who the entity was that provided the just a description, the supplier, the dates, the amounts, etc., etc. I'd like, as the Chair has asked, that we have a status column. That is exactly what's happened. But then I'd like to know who is the person responsible for that particular expenditure. Not the perpetrator, but on the board. Under whose department does that fall? Under whose ambit of authority does that fall? Okay? Because it's very easy for us to say, oh, we're members of the board, it's that guy over there. Under whose department does that fall? Who's responsible for that person? We know the accounting officer is ultimately responsible, but a lot of this happened last time. We're not liable for anything. So this is my second question, and maybe you can help me by a show of hands. Who here served on the last board for 2014-2015? Okay? Alright? Have any of you, are any of you subject to disciplinary inquiries? Are any of you guys to submit your resignation for this absolute mess that has happened in Tulsa in 2014-2015? Where is the buck going to stop with the current board? Are we all just going to be running for the hills?
Honorable, we need to say at what point in 2014 to this board, these directors come into the board. These are all legacy issues that we're dealing with. And they did not happen. These major issues we're dealing with, these directors were not there when these things happened. And there would be no basis for anybody to come to resign for the legacy issues that the board was imposed on this board. I think there'll be issues that happen on our watch, and we have to deal with them as that moment comes. But I think for the year under review, the current board is responsible for 8 months. 8 months of the financial year, the board was responsible. So we are not responsible for everything, but secondly, the country, they are not responsible for anything.
That is specifically why I'm asking. On the list that you can provide us, it's not just who the perpetrator is and what's happening to them, but who is the person responsible for that perpetrator? So which boss wasn't watching the ball? Which head of department is not watching the ball, which allowed the perpetrators to go and do what they want to do? That's what I want to know. We need to follow this back up, and we need to take responsibility for these things. And not just the smaller players. Everybody needs to get to help out. Thank you.
All right, I'll give Comrade Boy and then move on to Honorable Ross. I think.
No, mine is here this morning. I wanted more to what the chairperson said. And you are accusing parliamentarians to have interfered with your work. I just wanted to get that clear because Honorable Vincent Smith is not wrong. That anyone who is implicated, we should be able to follow up with this. Now, are you saying to us as also our members of parliament, that members of parliament have interfered with your duties, and which ones are those? It should not be general, because COPPA is never the frequentant of COPPA. Is dealing with the personal matters. Who are you accusing?
No, I'm not accusing anybody, Honorable Chair. Not at all. And I think SCOPA is doing its job. It has to interrogate us, has to hold us accountable. Because it helps us to perform better, to be stronger, to keep our eye on the ball. So I would not accuse SCOPA. I was referring, well, maybe I shouldn't have raised it here because it didn't arise. SCOPA is a role in another committee of parliament. But the point I was trying to make is that there are instances that because of the culture that exists in the organization, directors find themselves having to do more than what ordinarily the board would do. Because of the culture that hides information from the board, the culture of deliberately destroying records, not keeping records, which results in the board unable to discharge its responsibilities. Because for the board to discharge its responsibilities, it's got to have a management that is committed to compliance and that performs in accordance with the requirements of the law. That's all I'm saying. And that's not what we have. Honorable members might say, but why are you keeping them? There are laws in this country on how you deal with the removal of people from office or of employment, changing the conditions of employment, not to comply with the law.
That's fine. I think the issue of interest was around I'll come back to you, please. Allow Honorable Ross to deal with this section, and then we can deal with. After you, we can then deal with any other thing, every other thing that is in your authority.
Thank you, Chairperson. I'll try and cluster some of the questions together. I think we've had a tedious session in terms of the irregular expenditure.
And just for the record, in terms of non-compliance with legislation and regular expenditure, it seems that across the board in all departments, the non-compliance is about 72% in all contracts. Now, my question today would also be, do you exceed 72% non-compliance in regular expenditure? But what is rather significant from the financial statements today is that we have an unqualified audit report for the last 5 years or 3 years or further. And I mean, that could be perhaps misleading for the minister who ultimately has the responsibility of oversight. She sees an unqualified audit outcome, especially in the 2014-15 year. But what is significant, Minister, is that there's findings in this slide. And what's significant about findings is that the findings is significant in the fact that it deals with massive amounts exceeding billions of rands. And that is where my colleague zoomed in to say that although it's an unqualified audit report, we must note the findings in that unqualified report. And in that findings, we should note the substantial amounts in terms of the misappropriation of funds within Praga. Now, we've mentioned the irregular expenditure, and I think my colleagues have exhausted that issue. But just as a funding foundation, let's look at the funding of Prada, which also indicates that there's a subsidy, from the Department of Transport to the tune of 3.8 billion rand, which is a significant subsidy. And then, of course, in terms of your funding requirements, you also have fair revenue of 2.9, which is generous itself. You have lease rentals of 480 million, and then you have management fees of about 3 million. But ultimately then, except that we saw a loss in terms of Prada of 1.1 billion rand, which is also perhaps due to extensive expenditure that could have been incurred, we find that there is not, in terms of the oversight, not an audit committee. Now my quickest question would be, taking the situation that I've spoken about in terms of our qualified report, the findings that are significant, and also the responsibility of managing that subsidy correctly. Why can it be that from the years from 2014, 15 year, I don't see an audit committee affecting in the AG report? That would be the first question.
I remember, in terms of the audit committee, there has been an audit committee in all those years.
I refer you to the audit opinion history and page 5 of the PFMA audit outcomes for 2014-15. It does not. It's page 5 of the. I'm dealing with the audit agenda. So check page 5. And you can look at the audit committee. It's in place.
No, they wouldn't have that. That is ours.
Oh, that's ours. So you haven't seen it. But definitely then in our briefing it indicates that the audit committee is dysfunctional. Something that you should note. And that it's not established. Is that correct? Is it a good idea to put?
Well, maybe let's talk about functionality.
Yeah.
I've just been given the opinion history. That it mentioned, my understanding, compliance matters that were picked up.
Yes.
So they picked up compliance matters on audit committee in 10-11. Thereafter, there were no compliance matters on the audit committee after. So it means the audit committee thereafter, I see the AG also agreeing, after that, the audit committees, after 2011, tried to comply with all the compliance matters. That's why it's not there.
Oh, I see. It's a different analysis there. So at this point in time, you do have an audit committee established, and it's functioning well.
It actually talks about compliance matter. It means that the audit committee is always...
You have audit committee function well.
Yeah, okay. I can accept that then, although I would like to do a proper analysis of the AG report and how I see that. You see, Jefferson, also with regards to the material misstatements, which is not a concept of one for Stella, material misstatements in the financial statement. The AG then indicates that the statement is not prepared in accordance with the requirements of the Public Finance Management Act. And he said the root causes for this finding is that it's not accurate evidence and it was not completed timely, and that I think that the AG had to correct in the financial management of Prada. Do you agree with that statement?
Yes, I agree with that statement. Honourable Member, at that moment, when we submitted the audited financial statements to Auditor General, for example, I'll make an example of one letter.
Can I just find out? I see we're renecting CEO. Do you have a CFO trust?
Yes, I do. She has apologized, Chair. She
right. Continue.
At that moment, the financial department was busy with reallocation of expenses of the Eskom assets, because it was presented in a certain manner, which was an operating lease into financial lease. So we were still busy with that. So when we submitted the financial statement, that the exercise was not completed yet. But the information that we gave was not completed.
That might be the one factor, but there was not a one problem. Financial mistake. It has been there over there. Once I hear the point that you are making, that it does not talk to the fundamental person, the problem. Submitting financial statements
are inaccurate. Yes, I would agree with the chairperson. I think there's a lot of improvement needed before you present it to the AG in terms of your final preparation for the AG. It's a pity the CFO is not here. It should have been, a substantial input that you could have made to rectify the Chairperson, just with regard to material capital commitment, also reflecting in the AG report, the locomotives contract, I think we dealt with this about the currency weakness, perhaps, but the massive amount that is concerning the rolling stock fee, the budgeted amount 59.6 and then a 31 billion and then 8.6 understated, but I think we discussed it. It's also reflecting in the council statement, and I must urge the Minister, perhaps, looking at the findings when we talk about the amount of 59 billion rand, that the Minister and the Board especially gives special attention to that amount. It is concerning to note that perhaps the Minister and the Board did not take it up with the management itself. Perhaps you have, but in future, because of the unqualified audit outcome, putting perhaps senior management at ease is to look into the findings and to dissect the specific recommendations. That would be helpful. International sustainability of the subsidy, we've dealt with that. I think that's also very concerning to see that there were a loss. And then, of course, we've spoken about the irregular expenditure as indicated by the AG, that we think that your non-compliance is well above the 72% in terms of all contracts. I think that needs to be investigated. I think as my colleagues have indicated, that there needs to be some consequence with regards to this. And I think you presented this in terms of irregular expenditure to us. You did? And it was not provided by SCOPA, as indicated by my colleagues, but you provided us with that. I think it's a good start, but perhaps you can refine the list for us to make it more easier for us to identify what consequence management usually introduces. The significant compliance matters of 2014-15 is also significant, especially with regard to the non-compliance that was identified. And I think this is also a serious indictment on management. And that is the non-compliance of the invitation to participate as the agency did not consistently apply discretion to disqualify the bidder in terms of a conflict of interest. I think my colleagues have dealt with that. I think the AG highlights this issue, and I think this should also be a focus area of SCOPA. I fully agree with my colleagues in this regard. And the unsolicited proposal, I think we dealt with that. And I'm quite concerned that, you know, in terms of irregular expenditure and the unsolicited proposal, that it is becoming the norm in the organization. And perhaps it's a wake-up call for Praga to look into the details of this. Contract management, the prepayment of deposits, it does not sound well on the ear. And this is the issue that the AG has picked up. I think perhaps a workshop within your organization with regards to the implications of the financial management minister would be very helpful.
I will.
Yes. And then
I want to become an advisor.
I think I should become an advisor for the
Chairperson. I want you to focus on, but you have dealt with the audit committee, you have dealt with the annual financial statement. What is IT control and increase the minority.
Yes, but I'm going to deal with two other issues, Jadis, and the predetermined objectives, and then the IT controls.
Do them first, and then you can talk to the
yes, I'm done with this. I'll just deal with this now.
Sure.
Now, with regards to the predetermined objectives, the main issue here is, and the recommendation and the finding is to improve operational effectiveness and objectives. Now, that speaks to a whole range of issues, and I would like to ask to see if, or see, to give us some guidance whether you because I'm quite concerned that your response so far was that you will put plans in place. It is a challenge within the organization, and that you will follow up on certain recommendations, and that you're looking into a turnaround strategy. Now, looking at the recommendation from the Auditor General, which was produced or tabled on the 11th of November, 2015, can you tell us the progress that you've made in terms of this finding, perhaps? And whether you look at the recommendation from the AG that I find very weak, to say that the management should accept the accountability for the lack of performance of introduced provisional reviews. What reviews have been done, and whether you think those reviews are adequate? See, I suppose that is a question to the CEO to give an indication whether, since the 11th of November after the tabling of the of this AG keeping note, whether any kind of substantial plan has been put in place with regards to improving operational effectiveness.
Thank you, Chair, and thank you, Honourable Member, for the question. With regards to the operational efficiency, it relates to the issues of the quality of the service that we are delivering to the community. As I indicated earlier, asking what is this that is really affecting the quality of service? I did indicate the areas and that are affecting. But maybe the question is, what is it that is being done? From a signaling point of view, we've got contracts that are improving the new and putting in place the new technology from a signaling point of view, which will deal with the issues of safety, which will deal with the issues of facilitating the flow of the trains and the time that it will take for the trains to operate. We are also looking at the new rolling stock, as I indicated, that our rolling stock is failing the 1956 technology. There are no tracks to support it. All those issues along those lines. The new rolling stock is coming into play. We have started receiving the first two new trains that are going to be undergoing the track from the point of view. Over a period of 10 years, we'll be having up around 600 coaches in that space. Obviously, when the new technology comes in, there's quite a number of training and development to upskill our people to be able to deal with these things. But also, technology will also assist that what is more labor intensive will now change from that point of view and assist the effectiveness of our operation in that regard. So there are quite a number of things that are being put in place. The KTEC is also assisting us in making sure that we modernize our environment from that point of view. You bring in new technology, you need to upgrade your infrastructure from here, for example, your depots. We are also going through that process as well. So we are hoping that over a period of time, 3, 4, 5 years, we will have then completed that process, and the quality of service that we are rendering is also in line with the phasing in of the implementation of a project. Is also going to change in line with that.
All right.
Thank you.
Just a minute. Before you leave, whenever you're going to leave, we'll give you some 3 minutes to have a word on the proceeding. I'm not sure how, whether you can go to this now.
Yes, sir.
At some other point.
Yes, sir.
Yes, Chairperson, I gave the indication that I would need to leave earlier because we had a long-standing meeting with the Minister of COPTA with regards to many other matters that are related to our state of local government.
Right. So the time is actually will pass my
time. Right, we'll give you some few minutes to because in terms of the PFMA, the regulatory authority has this in relation to financial management. You appoint the board, provide the management, and when things happen way they have happened here, we look at the political leadership in terms of what it does and how it comes in. Well, we've looked in your head the argument that, or the point that has been doing recovery, and maybe other issues that you think you need to bring to our attention.
Thank you, Chairperson, and honourable members of the of SCOPA as well as the members of the portfolio committee that are present here, but also other participants in the meeting, including the board led by Chairperson Lefe and the acting group CEO, but also the representatives of the department, as well as National Treasury and the Auditor General and all protocol officers. Chairperson, I think I've heard the issues raised about the challenges that we have with this particular agency with regards to procurement, contract management, unsolicited bids, unprocedural appointments, as well as unprocedural dismissals. When you come to unsolicited bids, we have a history in the agency where bidders would come and offer a service out of the blue, and there would be no feasibility study done, there would be no test to the market, and the service providers or the solicitors would be engaged to do work, and it would just be a long list of things that unfold. I just want to say, listening to what the board chairperson and the audit committee chair, as well as other board of director members have said, but also including the group CEO, I just want to go a little bit back and indicate that since the appointment of the board and prior to this board, I have been engaging with the trust board. And one thing that I learned from the party that deployed me in government is the ability to keep records of your engagement as well as records of whatever you do. And that is why where we come from, we would have 1, 2, 3, 4 in those volumes. And that culture is a culture that I believe we need to uphold. I just want to indicate that with regard to the matters that are under review, I have got a list here. These are the letters that I've been writing to the board of Trust since my appointment as Minister of Transport. The previous chairperson with regards to the previous audit, but with regards to this particular issue, I would give an indication. On the 18th of August 2014, I wrote a letter to the board chairperson with regards to matters of the disposal of assets, which was one of the things that was of concern to the Auditor General. But also I wrote to the board to request a comprehensive report or indication on what they're going to do with regards to matters that are being raised by the Auditor General. I would also want to indicate that in October I also wrote, every quarter when I get the quarterly report, I wrote to the board to indicate to them the area of concern. But also equally so, when we get an opportunity to meet with the Auditor General's office, as well as after getting the report, we would engage procedurally so with the board with regards to this matter. I have written to the board to ask for clarification with regards to 70 audit findings in the previous period. I'm giving this history, Chairperson, to give you an indication on how the challenges that are related to what you earlier on indicated of the media reports emanated from. So,
The board took its time, and every time I would ask the board chairperson, where are you with regards to the matters of the auditor general, then you would tell me that there is a problem with regards to getting that particular information from management. I would also want to indicate that you raised concerns, Chairperson and Honourable Members, about the procurement of the rolling stock. On the 8th of January last year, I requested the board to give me a report on matters related to why there were a challenge in terms of the department getting information from FASA with regards to Kibela. There was also a challenge with regards to the steering committee that was supposed to be established by a Department of Transport, DTI, as well as a National Treasury, and I engaged with the board with regards to that matter. And Chairperson, I believe that all the engagements that I've been having with the board were initially and previously cited as the reason for the challenges or the lack of cooperation between the then CEO and the board, because the board would then have to get the information from them, and the group CEO would indicate that these letters from the minister are the source of concern for me, because it means that I've got to be always responding to these letters in the way in which the minister would want the response. And for me, that was the initial source of challenge. On the 8th of January, I wrote a letter to the chairperson on the second quarter performance and analysis, where APRA has only achieved 23% of their 39 blend target, which was deemed unsatisfactory. And we had serious challenges with regard to financial management that we raised, inadequate internal controls, revenue generation, procurement management, management of infrastructure projects, and human resource issues. I was given an indication by the then management of FRASA that some of the things that are being raised by the Auditor General, you don't necessarily have to agree with the Auditor General at all times. I said these are the issues that the Auditor General raises as a weakness of the company. And if we cannot account for the finances, if we are told that we've got inadequate control, one of the simplest things already that you picked up is the fact that there is no record keeping. The Auditor General indicates that when they were dealing with the Kibela BE procurement audit process, they were given a room and said that this is where the information is lying, you can search through there and find the information. Meaning that there's not even cataloging or proper record keeping. Already that gives you a problem. So, in essence, this is an indication of how big our challenges are. Because if you don't have internal controls, you can't account for your assets, you don't have your revenue generation is a bit weak, and you consider that. It also talks to contract management. The earlier issues that you raised about SA Fence and Gate. I was sent after all the battles, the service provider contacts me and says, Minister, I have not been paid by FRASA. I sent that SMS directly to the CEO because it is not within my area to be talking about payments. Then there was the issue of the battle between them and how it ended. They threatened each other with force. If that is the route they had to go, I said that there is no way that I can get involved. It is the way that the group CEO has to be able to. I also want to indicate that on the 26th of January 2015, I sent a letter to the chairperson with regards to the delay in dealing with the transfer of various properties under the City of Cape Town, which is another matter that I'm sure the committee will pick up at another time, which is part of the report. Also, later on, I sent a letter to the chairperson with regards to matters of the 18th of August, because we had not received the responses. And, chairperson, if I can go into the areas of the contract management. The Auditor General raises serious concerns about Chifambu, the locomotive that was procured. It was a study that was done assessing and commissioning a process that was done by RSR. RSR has since withdrawn its report. Why they have withdrawn it, it's a them that has got, you know, that the regulator has got to apply its independence. There was an indication that there are still issues that they still need to deal with. And there's the issue, and I would want to say to the members of SCOPA in particular, I believe that the modernization program, as well as the new rolling stock investment, it's a very good investment that the government got involved in. And I've got the responsibility to protect that investment. Because for me, that is investment in improving the services of the public passenger, public transport system for this country, which is one of the things that we need to actually deliver on in the next 5 years, which is the next 3.5 years. So this investment is an investment that truly we've got to protect. I will also want to say that the issues of Kibela, I would believe that we are dealing with them since the establishment of the hearing committee with Treasury, as well as the department and DTI, and I'm happy to indicate that on the 4th we have intended to go and turn the thought, but we know that the 4th is affected by other processes. We look into an ideal time. But we also have this big challenge with regard to Chifambu, which I don't know whether to report on, because it's a matter of course right now with regard to whether the contract should continue or not continue. The one thing that I've requested the board to deal with is the issue of consequence management. The issues of procurement, the issues related to whether we have the requisite skills, and one of those areas is related to why I asked the board to do an audit of the skills that the management and all the relevant role players in Prada has. And I want to indicate to you, Chairperson, that we asked for this from October last year and we haven't still received a report. They have given an indication that they're working with SACWA to get to the point of giving us the requisite information on whether SACWA does have the requisite skills. They've got a preliminary report, which if I go into it, will take me a very long time. Then I want to indicate that one of the things that you pick up on this issues of transfer is the culture of unaccountability. Chairperson, if I can indicate a letter from the minister requesting information, or a letter from the department to the CFO, the CEO requesting for information, can be seen as a bone of contention to destabilize an organization, then it means the organization didn't exist. That's the reality. Because if you are asked a question, you need to provide the information. But I want to say to you, Chairperson, as a department and as a ministry, we are on track in engaging with PASA with regards to these particular issues. We have requested them to correct everything that the Auditor General has asked them to correct on. And in fact, I want to give an indication that with regard to this contract, I have requested the Auditor General to do a forensic audit. I wrote to him on the 1st of August and he responded, gave me an indication that all the issues that we wanted to be dealt with were already covered in the previous 5 years, like Mr. Ross indicated, but also that there are so many investigations in PRASA and we need to make sure that we reconcile the investigations. I had an engagement with the Chief Procurement Officer of National Treasury, Mr. Kenneth Brown, as well as the chairperson of the board and representatives of the board, to indicate that we need to narrow down and reconcile the investigations so that we can have one point of reference, so that we don't have the entire team at PRASA who are doing work as we speak, suffering investigation fatigue. So there's lots of investigations that are happening within PRASA, and all of them are bordering on procurement and contract management. The problem of not being able to make sure that we can manage the contracts that we have. One of those is this one that you have indicated, that we don't know how long a contract is going to run and how long the contract is, how much that contract will cost the company. So these are the things that we are dealing with, and I would believe that we won't have 1 year to deal with 5 years of the challenges that PASA has been having, and including some of those that they call legacy issues that emanate from the establishment of PASA, or the delinking of passenger rail services from Transnet, which says to you some of those problems might also emanate from this particular process into the rail commuter services as well into PASA. So I want to say to you, Chairperson, that as the ministry and as the department, these are matters that we are engaging on, but we know that these are some of the areas that actually borders on the investigations that are being done. And I shudder to think of going into the deep details of each case, but I just think the high-level indication of the challenges that we experience. But I want to say to you, Chairperson, in short, as the Ministry of Transport, we believe that the investments that we are doing in the modernization of our fleet and our stations, the fleet through the locomotives as well as the trains, and the locomotives not necessarily being the new locomotives, but those that are being revamped and refurbished, is very important so as to make it possible that we can improve on the services that we are providing. The issues related to the station that is being attended to make it possible that our people are safe, the environment under which they are serviced is adequate, is also one of those interventions that we are making. Signaling to make sure that we can deal with the challenges of the late arrivals, the delays, and the scheduling of trains, but also the issue that I gave an indication on that I believe we need to protect, which is the new rolling stock, making it possible that we put together the infrastructure, we get the factory to be built, we get the necessary skills to make sure that this is not an investment for foreign skills, but also an investment for South Africans, and thereby creating the academy to make it possible that we train our people. But also the issue of security, safety and security of our passengers, our infrastructure, as well as others and personnel. We've got big challenges with regard to that, and the issues related to the procurement and contract management and all those others are related to some of the things that I'm talking to. The other issue is I think Honorable Nyami Boy also, or Honorable Ekana raised, with regard to whether the commuters or the taxpayers are getting paid for money. One of the things that we are doing is to make sure that through communication and marketing of the services, we could be able to improve the way in which we provide services. I would want to give an indication. One of the key challenges that we have had in the past was the commuters complaining about them not being informed on time when the trains are going to be delayed, which speaks to issues of communication. And I believe that the issues that is also of a big challenge is Chairperson would remember one of the times when I was requested to revise the target, and I refused to revise the target. In February, I'm asked to revise the target, and I was saying this is malicious compliance. We just want to make sure that we meet the target of meeting our 9 targets as indicated to the letter that has already written to the board. So I gave the board an indication that that cannot happen. Then we are also dealing with the issues that the AG raised with regards to the locomotives, like I indicated, and whether PRASA is a going concern. We are engaging with National Treasury. The DG has written to the DG of National Treasury with regard to this matter, but also the issue of the unfunded mandate of Shonoza Mail, where we are engaging with the annual 800 million rand that is an expenditure on PRASA, which we cannot afford because Shonoza Mail, which is the long distance services, is not adequately funded. PRASA gave me an indication that they would provide by the end of March the new funding model for the agency. We will engage with that funding model and engage with National Treasury to look at the issues that are being raised on whether we are now a basket case for National Treasury. Thank you very much.
All right. Thank you very much, Comrade Minister, for that very comprehensive, and he put on almost all the issues that we face. As we are leaving, let me just say that Honorable Ross can deal with the last two aspects of his work. I think.
Just one point, Comrade, Honorable Member Nyamikoi raised the issues, and yourself, Citizen, about dealing with criminality and corruption. That is one of the things that we believe that these investigations should be able to help us deal with and turn around the agency. You cannot have a situation where we are being seen as a haven for corruption. It is important, and once and for all, we deal with it. We've listened to the President, and we are dealing with this matter. Wherever it rises its head, is it in the Department, but it's also in the agency, and in Trust in particular, we're dealing with it. Thank you, Chairperson.
All right. Well, I just want to say, Comrade Minister, that the question of the relationship between the board and management, finding that fine balance, is very important, because it does appear that we're coming from a period where management used to have things their way. So we don't need to swing like a pendulum, and then where the board has become, I think as the chapter to say, there are accusations that they're now getting into administrative matters. Rightly or wrongly, I don't know about that, but I'm saying it will be important to make sure that we don't have a pendulum situation, swing from one extreme to the other extreme. I think the department has a responsibility to ensure that proper balance are maintained. I think we're doing the DG in terms of ensuring that the board and management are able to do their work and do their work properly. So that it must not be that 2 years down the line, find that the board so active that some of the mistakes that are now getting reported on reflect on the board, because it was just so dull that you could no longer separate management from the board. I'm just saying, for me, that is a critical point. What still, because we have an active CEO, I don't know for how long. I don't know whether the CFO is permanent or acting, because those have a bearing on how management is able to assess itself, do its work, and account to the board.
Thank you, Chairperson. With regard to the acting position of the CEO, I just want to indicate that the board did start with the process of recruitment, and they are at the point at which they will be reporting to the minister so that the minister can take the necessary process forward. So it means the appointment is imminent. With regard to the CFO, I think that, Chairperson, the CEO didn't give a full reflection. This is one position that I would be lying to you if I say I know the CFO of Prata. I know that it's a woman, but I've never seen her. Not at any engagement that I've had with Prasa, not at any formal meetings with Prasa, not even at the AGM. I was told she is off sick for a very long time. And that is why the history on this appointment of the former official, who then had to come back as an advisor, advising the very CFO, and all those particular things. I think, if this committee had enough time to dig into these matters, I listened to the trail of questions, and I was just saying, if the committee had the full time to devote its time to these matters, they would have just taken on this matter 1 hour or 2 hours. On Chifawa, I'm sure the whole day. On other matters, just like that. And I think it is important that the groups, acting group CEO, that is an indication. Yes, the CFO is not here. But what are the reasons for the group CFO not to be here? They did give an indication that she gave an apology. But no details on this apology, on what is she saying, why she can't be here. Which I believe that it is important that the committee be taken into confidence on why the group CFO is not there. And I asked the chairperson or the group CEO to raise that particular
Yeah, can we talk to this point, chairperson or acting CEO? I mean, we only heard that the CFO is not here.
Thank you, through you, Chair. The Minister has said that if we have enough time, it will take quite a long time to get into greater details of this. But broadly, the problem emanates right from the appointment of the CFO. The CFO, as a group CFO, it was indicated that she had a medical condition, and this medical condition is impacting in her performing her responsibility. She hasn't been at work for quite a long time.
What is quite a long time?
Okay. I would say that even before I started on this acting position from July, she was already not available at work. She has just come back about 2-3 weeks ago, if I'm not mistaken, and since then she has not been available. She has been undergoing a process of a medical boarding through incapacity. The report that we have received was that they would not grant medical boarding request. We also received a legal opinion that says she should be put back to work. We know the challenges that are prevailing in terms of her being able to cope with the work, given the pressure that you would have picked up in engaging with us, that if it is someone with some frail, with some challenges, it might be very difficult for that person to cope with. It is not business as usual, where you have good, conducive environment that you...
So who's dealing with your finances at this point?
She's back at work now, as I said 3 weeks ago. Before that, the general manager in finance was dealing with the issues of finance in the organization.
All right. Okay. Thank you very much, Comrade Minister. You will please. Honorable Ross.
Thank you, Chair. Just in conclusion, then, Chair, perhaps a concluding remark with regards to the predetermined objectives. I don't think there was an adequate response by management with regard to the predetermined objectives in terms of improving operation effectiveness. If it's very clear today that there's not a CFO, I mean, we can't be operational effective if there's since July there was no CFO in terms of finance management. Those are just my remarks, and I think we really need to have a report from Prado with regards to this admission. Also, with regards to then, in conclusion, the information technology controls, I find the findings are quite concerning. It's a cause for alarm. The agency does not have a formally documented ICT disaster recovery plan and business continuity plan. No formal documentation policy or process is in place to govern even the IT technology controls, and policies and procedures have not been documented and is not approved. What is your comment on this? This was actually a question that I would have loved to pose to the CFO. If perhaps the General Manager of Finance is present, I would love to pose that to him. What is the progress in this regard? And if certainly none of the members can ask us this, I think SCOPA would, my recommendation would be better, and that we receive a report in terms of the lack of implementation in terms of IT concepts.
But because
then
it's around IT controls, that's where we where now.
Thank you, Chair. Honourable Member raised a question on the governance, the ICT controls in the organisation. I can tell you that the ARM committee and the board in general has raised the issues around the ICT controls.
but not only on control, in terms of how ICT is assisting the organization and
look, the issue is not for the board management to raise the issue. The point is to get the issue sorted out. You management and the board, you are the people, when you come to us, you will be able to say, this is what we're done, this is what we're doing, to get the things sorted out.
On the areas where that they have raised that they need funding from the organization, funding has been shifted and has been given funding. We're hoping that in the next 6 months, in areas of ATM, in areas of finance where they needed to give us and enable the businesses to function properly, in areas of procurement where they needed to be enabled the businesses to function properly, they have now been given funds. And even in the next financial year, from a CAPEX point of view, a certain amount of money that has been given to them to be able to equip the business to be able to function properly at an efficient and effective level.
And just a follow-up, very short question. Is the procurement system computerized?
Yes, it's a module on the surface. It is computer.
And then my information, the last question is that my information is that there are three systems, IT systems in Gaza. Are they interrelated? Are they talking to each other?
The phone system at Gaza is set. I'm not aware of any other system from a procurement point of view that is good.
All right. Thank you, Ross. Kasim.
Hey, thank you, Shane. Actually, I'm not intending to speak, but I just want us to go out of the meeting having been clarified the matter of members of parliament who are presenting the board in a security duties. Because I guess the board has got to share duties to implement and making sure that the plaza operates very efficiently. So I want the clarity from the chairman of the board of to say which members is he talking about, because he says no, he's not talking about scope of members. Is he referring to support particular committee members?
Chairperson, I will not mention specific names, but certainly the transport portfolio committee has repeatedly raised concern that this board meets too many times. It should not be meeting too many times. Of course, some of the management team, including the former CEO, was saying that we are interfering with the board. And we were told that, look, why don't you meet only quarterly? The difficulty we have is that when we come here to parliament, members of this parliament want the board to account. And if the board is going to sit for 3 months waiting for management to perform, and management are not performing, like what the minister says, minister writes to us, we say we need this information to go to the minister, and it takes its time. We don't get it on time. We can't come here to the honorable members of the committee. They know it's not us, it's management. So what do? We have to get the work done. And if it means meeting 15 times, 20 times to push the work, we think we should be able to do so. Particularly because these directors were not meeting because they wanted extra board fees. Meeting mainly to get management to perform. We do have a very difficult situation in this organization because the manner in which appointments were made in the past, and those people are now in their position, was such that it was more like jobs for cats. You have lots of people in positions where they cannot perform. And to the extent that you had managers who would raise concern, disagree with the group CEO or with their bosses, they are either dismissed or they are simply deployed in areas where they cannot afford. I mean, we have been going out now to find the engineers in Prasa because we're told that there are no engineers. We are finding a lot of them. They are there, they are being pushed to the periphery, and the organization is surrounded. Let me give an example. Prasa, from the days of the SARCC, was involved in developing a ticketing system. State-of-the-art ticketing system which would have enabled us to be able to get numbers on the passengers using trains and ensuring that cash is not collected by individuals where it disappears. Prasa has not used that system. It's been used by Gautrain. All of us who use Gautrain, we see how well it is working. Prasa has not used it. We can't find an explanation why, if it was initiated by the Department of Transport with 20 million rand spent on it, why is it that it was not used to benefit the company and the people of this country? But that is the nature of problems we are dealing with. And then, of course, you have people jumping around saying this chairman is a bad chairman. All that we are asking for is accountability, and we want to be held accountable here. That is why I'm saying, if the law must be applied, we will subject ourselves to that. But I have every reason to believe that we would account for how we deal with the challenges facing the organization. Here in Skopje, we have not been told not to meet too often, but it has been raised in the other committee.
Kumbutulwane, I saw your hand earlier. I'll come to Kumbutulwane.
No, I was just going to say, Chairperson, quite clearly, we need to get all these investigative reports in front of us. Even the minister said there are so many, and it would be in our interest that they come forward so that you can see exactly what is being investigated that makes this institution not function properly. I must say, CEO, as acting as you are misleading us again. The minister said to you, give us the detail about this CFO. You're not telling us when what employed was going on. Can please give us that detail? Because we know what is exactly going on. Because she's the source of the problem in how our finances. It's not your finances, not your wife's finances. They belong to the public. And we have to defend them. And based on that, which will be our position, is seated here, that as long as there's no answers, as long as they're misleading us, with the PFMA, we do have the capacity to do anything that we have to do, which is, at the end of the day, investigate the minority and charge people to be charged in terms of their responsibility. And we, as Honorable Vincent just said, we are going to apply our mind quite extensively on this particular matter. They have not been able to present, to put forward to us a case that says that we can't not believe what the Auditor General is telling us about Prasa. It's not convincing us. As you have said here, leading the delegation of the party, you are not convincing us in how you are doing the work of this particular one. And the President has said it quite clearly that these agencies have to be investigated, and we have to deal with their boss, we have to deal with everything that affects them. So it is based on that mandate that we are becoming more aggressive in dealing with this type of environment. We cannot be seen leaving you alone in the manner that they have conducted yourself in front of the committee itself.
Okay. All right. Commissioner, just note that. Just note that. And take what Commissioner is going to.
Thank you, Chairperson. In terms of protocol, I wouldn't be speaking because, Chairperson, I wanted to raise the issue of the CFO that Kumbeboy has raised it, because I wanted to say, in my life in Public Accounts Committee, I think it's for the first time that we have a hearing where the CFO is not present. But given the reasons probably and what Honorable Nyan has said,
maybe we'll get the information that really it's a matter that we are not satisfied. But she or me is the owner of this annual report. It's the owner, it's the one that signed off the annual report. And hence, then there's so many wrong things, so many things that went wrong into this report is because of the absence of the report. Thank you.
All right. Okay, we want to bring this to a close.
No, I just have to make one point that maybe we should also indicate in this meeting that we are going to babysit Prasa up until it is an organization. We are not going to allow them, that is, to do as they wish. Because to be honest, even the answers that they provided, if you evaluate those answers, those are not correct answers that they're supposed to provide to us. Honorable Smith was right to say at this level, we don't expect senior managers not to account on simple things like an attendance register. Please, people, take us serious. You see not to take us serious.
All right. Chair?
Yeah, all right, Chair. We really appreciate the robust manner in which we have been engaged in this meeting. Let me briefly just return to the issue of the Group CFO. The Group CFO, we are informed, was appointed just before this board was appointed. She has been erratic. We were told by the former CEO that because she's not well and because she was being intimidated, she had complained of intimidation by some service providers, they had then agreed to work from home. And I said, we can't have a CFO who cannot come to work. Go and negotiate with that Group CFO that the lack of Prasa is so important and that if she's unable to attend to her responsibilities by being in the office regularly, she should accept that, she should step down and be given something else to do. Of course, we appreciate the fact that we were told that she had this illness that made her, you know, to be unstable at times.
What is that illness?
Well, psychiatric. And we said that it can be affected. When Gavin Fenton were told that he's the special technical financial advisor to the Group CEO, I said to the Group CEO, you can't appoint a special technical financial advisor. Your advisor should be the Group CFO. And if the Group CFO needs additional capacity, that Group CFO would then source additional capacity to enable her to do a job. So where we are sitting, therefore, that we've got a CFO who should not continue with her job because the pressure is of a nature that she can't carry. She's returned. I personally sent the message. I was traveling when I got the message that we're going to be coming to Parliament. I said the Group CFO must be there, and I was told that she has sent an apology. She cannot come. So it is a matter that we would need to deal with. I had previously said to the former Group CEO and the current AG CEO to say, look, go and get the people, mediators at the CCMA. Let them engage in negotiations. Let this person, with a view to us getting her to accept that she in the best interest of the company and the country, that she should allow the company to appoint another person. The difficulty we have is that we are bound by the laws of the country. When a person is still in that position, we cannot appoint another one. What should have happened in terms of law is that once this person was sick for something that spans more than 36 days, it should have been concluded that her service should be terminated, because the law provides that you may have sick leave that does not extend beyond 36 days. But those in management who were in control of the situation simply did not act in accordance with the law. And we regret that we are in this situation. From our side of the board, I think we would be willing to take over as a board to engage in the negotiation with that person and see how far we can go. But we do appreciate the fact that it has to be, we have to bring the thing to an end.
All right. No, that's fine. I think four things from our side, although we should want to get feedback and check. Should not be like last year. We asked for information and that information never came. Four things. One, that information on a regular expenditure in terms of a status report. What we want is, yes, here is the amount, this is the name of the company, this is what happened, and this is what we've done in terms of the people responsible. Two, we would want to get a report on the issue of the CFO. Because, Chair, I don't think that the board necessarily needs to take over. Yes, he is a group. Taking group CEO. I'm not getting a suggestion that the issue is feeling not competent enough to handle. I would imagine that the insinuation was that that is what happened there. Now, it has been raised again here sharply, and one is attention. Thirdly, the issue of investigation. What is being investigated? One is a list of the issues that are being investigated. Whether by the police, or internally, or by whatever, as long as they relate to proper. These investigations, and whether they need to be concluded. And lastly, the issue of the disciplinary cases. What disciplinary cases are we having at PRAFA, and at what stage are these? We would like to have this information in the next 2 weeks. I think 2 weeks very separately. In the next 2 weeks. And what it means, Chair, it means that within the next 2 weeks, when we leave here, the issue of the group CFO, a process has to be initiated to seek to do exactly the issue that you were talking to. And then, as Commissioner kind of said, we are going to be very close to PRASA. We're going to walk this journey with you. So our meeting here today does not mark the end, but actually marks the beginning of continuous engagement on aspects or issues that have been raised that say here are the abnormalities. So that we're able to see how these are being attended to until and up to a point where we're satisfied that things are now moving in the right direction. I must also express the outrage that my comrades have expressed here. It cannot be. I think it's important for us to have a sense of national responsibility. Given the possibility of an entity that is supposed to serve the country at such an important juncture as PRAS. To what extent we're able to demonstrate that in whatever we do and whatever we say, we're always cognizant of that responsibility that one carries. And I'm saying this not because we're talking about people who are not here, but also directed to you so that when you leave, there shouldn't be skeletons falling out of the cupboard. You know, I'm saying this because in this committee we don't deal with shipping talk about board members meeting with suppliers, board members drinks, etc. We don't deal with those kind of things. And I'm just saying it's important that we take our work seriously and act in the best interest of the agency and the country. And do those things that are expected to require of us. So yes, we're going to be with you, and we're going to take accountability. If Parliament allows, we'll probably make a trip to come and see where you're operating from. Just try and see the layout and the system, how things are. Just to make sure that we keep this thing together. So within the next 2 weeks, we'd like to get information on this form. Once we have this, then we'll communicate back in terms of what we do. But I want to thank you, Chair, DG, Board, National Treasury, or the General, as well as you could, for this engagement. We shall meet with Pastor later. We're just suspending the proceedings because this will continue. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
But you want this presentation? No, no, we don't have.
We don't have?
No, we don't have.
You want a copy of the annual report?
Yeah, the annual report.
No.